Welcome to the Ladies with Gumption podcast, episode 84, Paper Tigers. I am May, and I am here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
We recap DCTV in a flash, as you know, or for a lot of new listeners who we've received some feedback from, welcome. We are happy to have you. Thank you for listening. You can find all of our stuff over at Twitter, DCT with our handle is DCTV Gumption. You can send us all your lovely long emails to ladieswgumption@gmail.com. We're over on the Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. And of course, you can find all our podcast episodes on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm also attempting to get it up on SoundCloud. So if that's your thing, yay. And we are still doing the Facebook post. So if that's your territory, that's awesome. We remember the post. So. And we also have a couple of t-shirts and products that you can check out on Redbubble. Our shop link is over on our Tumblr page. So, you know, if you're feeling generous or you just want some cool ladies LWG swag, please visit that. And we also have a new Patreon announcement. So we've already set up our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/DCTVGumption. And now that we're hitting summer hiatus, we are going to be having our summer series. So topics like overall season reviews, like what we thought of the overall season, hits and misses, season predictions, character breakdown episodes, race and fandom stuff. We found this thread about plotters versus planters when it comes to storylines and characters and how that relates back to DCTV. So if you want all of that good stuff, we do have a minimum contribution of $10. So if you would like to hear more from us about all of these things and so that we can continue giving you this podcast, because it does get a little bit expensive, we would appreciate the contribution. We are poor. We would appreciate the contribution and so that we can continue, you know, providing you with all this stuff that you'd like. And if you have suggestions for what we should do that you would like to hear from us from, you can go ahead and contribute. And then it'll be $15 if you want to hear us rant about Endgame or Game of Thrones and all that good stuff. So again, patreon.com/DCTVGumption. And minimum contribution will be $10.
If you pay me, I will keep talking.
Yes.
Are you going to list like the tiers on the Patreon page?
Yes,
as well?
I will post Tumblr, Patreon, and our Twitter as well, so that everybody can get that info in case you do skip the first part of this podcast. All right, moving on to news. Eric Carrasco is leaving Supergirl, so he is one of the writers, and he announced that his 3-year contract, which we just learned writers have 3-year contracts, is up, and he will be moving on to another show. Oliver, in the season finale of Arrow, has been confirmed to die in the Crisis crossover. So death date 2019, that has been confirmed. Oliver will die so that Barry can run.
I think it was like his on his tombstone, it said like December 8th or something.
Yeah,
I saw that. No, maybe that was on the Flash byline. I think the Flash byline, when it updated, it said December 8th, 2019.
Yeah, so I think it just says 2019 for Oliver.
Yeah. And speaking of the Crisis, actually, there was some CW upfront news. So Crisis has been confirmed to take place over 5 shows. So that's 5 hours of your life over 2 quarters. So the first 3 episodes.
It's actually like 5 hours. It's not just 5 hours. It's like 5 hours and a month and a half.
Yeah.
That's true.
So just when you thought you couldn't get enough, they have extended it. The first 3 episodes of the crossover will take place starting in December of 2019. And then the last 2 parts of the crossover will be back during the mid-season premieres in January 2020. And Legends will begin mid-season, so that's expected to come, like, the Legends episode of the crossover is expected to be in 2020. And then since Oliver's dying in 2019, the Arrow episode of the crossover, I'm sure, will be during December.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we have...
You know what? This also means that, like, the Legends don't all die.
That's true.
It's true, because their season premiere will be Crisis. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Maybe some of them will die, but not all of them. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I expect quite a few characters to die, but that'll be predictions. Emily Bett Ricards is not set to return for the Arrow series finale at this moment, as the president of the CW has confirmed. So there's no plans to bring her back, because I don't think she has like a schedule, unless her schedule opens up and they do something with that. Yeah, same. It also means she probably won't appear in the crossovers either. So the finale.
The only way that I would see her like appear in the crossover is at maybe like the end where, when Oliver like actually dies and Monitor is taking him to some place that time doesn't matter. So Felicity's already like waiting there for him. I could see that.
Yeah, it'll be like the ending of Lost. Yeah. They meet in a little church.
Yeah. And it'll be something she probably already shot for the crossover before she left.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Batwoman debuted a new trailer and released a poster and a couple of photos from the pilot. It will premiere on a Sunday in October. I'm not sure when, but at 8 p.m., meaning Supergirl will now move to 9 p.m. on Sundays. Black Lightning will still be at 9 p.m. on Mondays, and Arrow is moving to Tuesday nights at 9 after The Flash come fall. Ruby Rose has also confirmed that Batwoman takes place pre-Elseworlds crossover. So it's before she even became Batwoman, so it's kind of like a prequel. Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to like speed through that origin to get her up to Crisis, or if Crisis is just going to be like a fast forward and then they go back to regular.
I feel like it kind of has to be a fast forward, because like look at Legends, it's going to be their season premiere. Like there's no way to get them in place for Crisis.
That's true. Unless, well, we know that there's going to be like a little snippet of a tease for Crisis in the Supergirl finale, but I don't think that's the case for Legends, because they had nothing to do with Elseworlds last year.
Right.
So, yeah, that'll be interesting. I guess we'll just hear more at San Diego Comic-Con. Batwoman trailer. Thoughts? Yes.
I thought that there were some good things and bad things. The good things, I think, with Kate and Sophie, like, there's one part where, you know, like, obviously, the way that they set up, and we can talk more about this on, like, Love Boat or whatever, but the way that they set up, like, Sophie is obviously, like, the, you know, the kickstart or the catalyst to Kate becoming Batwoman, because she's doing it to save Sophie, who's been kidnapped by Alice in the Wonderland Gang. And then I think there was, like, a part in the crossover where, you know, she does meet up with Sophie and she's like trying to like tell her to be quiet. And I thought that was really like the chemistry there was really good. But overall, I thought it was kind of wooden. Like it seemed like one tone in the whole trailer. So I'm still kind of nervous about that. And then I think at the upfronts, we learned or saw that most, if not all of the staff on Batwoman is white. Didn't you say there's like two or three white women and then...
Yeah, there's at least three white women and, as far as I can tell, three white men. Yeah. Or at least two white men, and one of them is producing, and I'm not sure if he's writing, but he also is at least white passing. I don't know. I can't tell with that one. But at least two white men, for sure. And then three white women.
Yeah. And see, that's another thing. It's kind of like, because, you know, when we first got the character breakdowns, you had Lucas Fox, Kate's half-sister, whose name I can't recall right now, and then Sophie's played by Megan Tandy. So that's like three minority characters that are in very important spots in Kate's life. But then when I looked at the trailer, I'm like, I can already tell that the most important relationship in this show is going to be Kate and her dad. So I feel like the dad is going to take up a lot. Kate and her dad, and then Kate and Alice. And I think when Ruby did like an interview during upfronts, and the reporter like specifically asked about her love life, she was like, well, basically said, do not get your hopes up for that. Like, you know, the whole Kate has to work on herself, and like, it's a lot about the past. And so Sophie's part of the past. And if they're focusing on her as like a past tense, then, you know, what is there really for me to look forward to on that front either? So I don't know. I'm still meh, but I'm a little bit more on the negative side of the meh now.
That's fair. Tati?
I like the music in the background of the trailer. but no, honestly, like, it seemed fine to me. Like, I didn't have... I, you know, I had the same concerns about the writer's room. And we're going to see, you know, how they treat their characters and also, like, how committed they are, even, like, even race aside and, like, diversity of perspective aside, how committed they are to telling a good story over shock value just based on the fact that this person wrote Vampire Diaries. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That reminds me, the other thing that annoyed me is all of the hashtag feminism, like, you know, this is Batman's suit. It'll be even better. Like, this suit is perfect. It'll be even perfect when you make it for a woman.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't want a man to get, you know, credit for a woman's work. I mean, just say, it's like, people don't talk like that in real life. It's like, it'll be perfect if you make it for me. And me is a woman, so thereby, you know, like, it means...
Yeah, it's implied.
Yeah, just say it's implied. What if it's me? Yeah. Like,
yes.
But yeah, it is. It's like, it's too on the nose. And so, like, you've got, like, right now, I'm looking at the dislike ratio on this trailer. It's got 37,000 likes and 88,000 dislikes.
Wow.
And it's because, obviously, there's already the people that, like, the crazy men who just are going to hate it because it's about a woman in the first place. And then, on top of that, because it's not... it's not sincere, I think, in its feminism, or doesn't feel sincere.
Yes.
Then you've got the people who are distinguishing between, like, I'm not going to support it just because it's a woman. I want it to be this, this, and this, and it's not. So, you know, a lot of hate on this trailer to begin with. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope that they overcome the initial perception. I think that it has the potential to be good. I like the cast. I like the Alice storyline in general in the comics. I think they've made the Sophie storyline seem interesting. So there's somewhere good that they can go with it, but we'll have to see if they
can. I think the Sophie storyline looks interesting in the trailer.
I'm
a little bit worried about how Ruby answered the question when asked about it, like, over the course of the season. But from the trailer, it looked interesting.
Yeah, I mean, she basically said it wasn't going to be... so far central, but she's only read, like, the pilot episode. She knows vaguely where things are going, probably, but they haven't given her any scripts. But I agree about it feeling wooden. There was just nothing, no certain scene besides, like, the one with her and Sophie that kind of, like, made it for me, if that makes sense. Like, it was just kind of there, and there was nothing else about it that was very... Yeah, Alice is for sure interesting, but there's nothing about it that makes me want to watch it besides we have to talk about it, you know. so I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, if only because they're gonna have at least written the first 14 episodes or so without the influence of the internet or you know, reviews and things like that. So I want to see where they're headed in that case, without other people, like, talking in their ear, them looking things up and things like that. So I'm willing to see where it goes, and hopefully
I think at that minimum, it's just going to be like season one Supergirl with, like, the season that I didn't watch of Supergirl because of all of the, like, the on the nose trying, like, super hard to be, you know, this is not Superman, it's Supergirl, or not Batman, it's Batwoman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't have its own identity yet. So, yeah, that's exactly what it is. All right. Now that we've talked about our Batwoman feels, DCEU news. Robert Pattinson has been cast to play Batman in the new Matt Reeves Batman movie, which will be out in 2021. So do we have any feelings about that casting?
Confusion?
I think, people know him from Twilight, but I've seen a bunch of others. He is a good actor.
He is a good actor, and I think that it's just, like, the Twilight stigma is very hard for any of those actors to kind of get out of that shadow. I think Kristen Stewart has also done, like, a whole lot of other stuff outside of Twilight, but that, you know, on her gravestone, he'll be like Twilight.
So yeah, that's true.
It's difficult, but I think he has, like, he's better than some of the other choices. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Right. It was, I think that for me, my concern or whatever was, like, the direction they were going in to begin with, which you could see based on all their choices.
Yeah.
Like, making him younger, and also, I don't know, just, like, I don't know. Like, when I'm like, oh, Bruce, like, I want to see Nicholas Holt as Bruce Wayne.
Like, no.
All right, I guess. Like, who the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. So it was already kind of, like, weird. So if you're going in that direction, then Robert Pattinson is just fine. Like you guys said, he's a good actor. You know, I don't really think about him. I don't feel like negatively about him because of Twilight, but I don't feel like, wow, he's really going to kill this because I don't have faith in, not because of Twilight, but like, I don't have faith in like the direction that this Batman has been going in this universe since its inception. And so like, now I'm just like waiting for this movie to happen, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. Like, I'm still on, like, if will this movie happen? If it happens, then I'm sure that Robert Pattinson will be a fine Bruce Wayne.
It's kind of like a, I don't know if it's, they're going for, like, a blend of Nightwing and Batman, since, like, you know, instead of actually doing a movie on Nightwing or casting Dick into the DCEU, it's like, well, let's just make Batman younger and see how that goes. So.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's not that his casting bothers me either. You know, like I said, I think he's a good actor. I think he'll do fine. It's just the monotony of constantly doing the same thing for DC. You know, it's just they're obsessed with Batman and Superman. How many times are they going to reboot Batman over and over? And like just in this past decade and a half alone, you know, we've gotten so many Batmans. And I just think that DC has so many other characters that they can work with that already have a popular built-in fan base, and they can bring those characters to life rather than just relying on what's safe for them. So
or even grow their fan base by introducing new movies and like new audiences to characters that don't get enough shine in like the, you know, comics world, like they did with Aquaman, like they did with Shazam. More of that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. On to our feedback. So we have a lot of feedback this week. I'm going to start in order. I screenshotted all of them. Nana, I hope I pronounced that right. A longtime listener of your podcast and big fan. So this is my first time sending feedback. Thank you so much, Nana. As I was just, I just wanted to pop in and talk about some thoughts on the Flash finale. I've seen so many people laud this episode as one of the best finales and that it's second only to the season one finale. And I think this goes to show that you can throw logic and narrative coherency out the window, but stick a good heart-wrenching emotional landing and have a couple of strong fight coordination sequences, and people will think it's a great episode of the show. For the record, I'm in the minority that I disliked the season one finale. It was repetitive and unoriginal, but I'll admit Barry saying goodbye to a dying Nora Senior was devastating enough for me to understand why people think it's amazing. I think that's like the one episode, the one moment I do remember from that finale.
Basically.
I like the season five finale much more than the season one finale, but that's solely because of my personal bias. Candace gets the meatiest, most emotional material, and she runs away with the whole thing. The dagger consumes dark matter to remove meta abilities. So we've been told that repeatedly. We've also been told that the metahuman cure removes dark matter repeatedly. So why would the shard in Grace's head connected to the dagger somehow have too much dark matter that this counteracts the effect of the metahuman cure? Every meta has dark matter, and the whole point of the cure is to remove it. If dark matter counteracted the effects of the cure, then there would be no point of the cure. Metatech or whatever shouldn't be treated differently. I agree. And she's, let's see, I found Nora a difficult character to extrapolate narratively. I don't dislike her, but I don't like her much either, mainly because I can't get a grasp on her character. She's annoyingly impulsive to the point that it's aggravating, but there's not much else to her in terms of fleshed out character development. Her finally accepting the consequences of her bad decisions was one of the few shining character moments for her, but I genuinely didn't feel anything when she got the snap. Even though the performances from Candace Grant and Jessica were great, it left me cold. But I think what actually resonated with me emotionally was the aftermath, and that's why this finale is way better than, let's say, the season one finale. While I'm not invested in Nora as a character, I'm greatly invested in her parents, and there's something painfully real about watching a mother and father grieve the loss of their child. Iris breaking down in the cortex is tough to watch because Candace is giving it her all, and it really hit me that Iris lost one of the two loves of her life, and she's about to lose the other one in crisis. Sad. So overall, it honestly was not a great episode, but I think it hit some excellent emotional notes, so therefore it's certainly one of the better Flash finales, which isn't saying much because the Flash has a pretty shoddy track record when it comes to finales. I'd probably rank the season 2, season 3, and season 5 finales roughly on the same level. Interesting. Emotionally resonant, good fight sequences, but narratively incoherent. Thank you so much for your feedback. Moving on to Anita Vacation. Thanks for walking us through the highs and lows. highs and many, many lows of season five, ladies. Looking forward to however you choose to spend the hiatus. Did anyone else feel that season five had a promising start? Thanks to JPK's uncanny physical embodiment of her on-screen parents and her yes. excellent acting, the premiere reconnected with the adventure, fun, and heart that made audiences embrace the show. It didn't seem like the show fully found that footing again until the last half hour of the season, which is why I had a bittersweet reaction to the finale. I loved seeing the West Allen family facing off against Eobard Thawne. He's like the guy who succeeds because he works hard while Barry gets by with natural talent. But the Flash isn't showing himself to be much of a rival for Eobard, is he? Eobard always seems to plan better, outthink, and outrun Barry, whatever the situation, whatever the timeline. I also felt some type of way about him referring to Nora as our little runner and addressing
oh my God.
Always a pleasure. So I'm really going to need Barry to wipe that smug look off his face in season six. Me too. Tasha is back. Tasha is back from her angel feelings.
We missed you.
Yes. She says, hey, ladies. So I have some conflicting feelings on the season finale that was written as a series finale. I felt the conclusion of the Emiko / Ninth Circle storyline felt a bit rushed and her death lacked the emotional weight it should have had. Completely agree. That being said, the end of the episode hit like a freight train. I like the parallel they made between Black Siren redemption, making her a canary, and the potential for Emiko to do the same with support. Loved having Bronze Tiger back, even if his entrance was sudden. Curtis is proposing to Detective Anitas. Good for him. Put a ring on it. The fight scene with Bronze Tiger, Diggle, and Oliver, as well as the one with Emiko and Oliver against the Underground Men, was really good. We also got Roy flips, which makes me endlessly happy. Future Team Arrow is taking over. I've always liked the idea of OTA babies and Zoe taking up their parents' mantles and protecting the city. Same. Honestly, the goodbyes this episode were rough. Felicity with Mia and William at Oliver's grave was sad. Oliver with baby Mia was heartbreaking, and by the time Felicity said goodbye, I was in tears. Since it was one of the last scenes on Emily's last day of filming, it wasn't just the characters but the actors saying goodbye. Dislikes. We really didn't get an explanation for why Roy was on the island alone. We did not. I think they're saving that for next season. And then where did Beatrice come from? I have the same exact question. Her and Virgil are just out there in the world. Like, how exactly was the Ninth Circle going to benefit from the destruction of the city? Kind of bummed we didn't get more Laurel. She has Flash thoughts as well, which I didn't realize you watch Flash, Tasha, so yay. I knew Cisco was leaving, and I'm glad he's happy, but it sucks. He was such a fun character, but he wasn't announced as
people think he's leaving.
Yeah.
It's like next season is going to be like, you know, I really miss Cisco. I wish he was here, and Cisco's in the back. Like, I am here. He's like, you know what? Sometimes
I
can
do it. I think because they left it so open-ended. Oh, God. They did leave it kind of open-ended for lots of characters on the show, to be honest, which I wonder about. But he's not leaving as of now. Nora being erased isn't surprising, but it was still incredibly sad. Can Reverse Flash die already? He is the worst, and I'm honestly sick of him. Joe is Captain. Yay. It is what he deserves. Also kind of love that Captain Singh knew Barry was the Flash. That was a great scene. I agree. So happy my man got to be smart. Danielle sent us some feedback. Howdy, ladies. I didn't enjoy the Arrow finale. I thought the jumping back and forth between the present story and the future was pretty jarring. It felt all over the place, but admittedly, it may be because I haven't watched a full episode of Arrow since Lost Canary. I wasn't really expecting...
It was for, the direct parallels between Mia, like, father and daughter. But yeah, I understand why it seemed kind of, like, abrupt.
Yeah, for sure. I wasn't really expecting any Laurel content, but I would have liked to see her say goodbye, so we know if she's going back to Earth 2 or sticking around. And I guess we don't know if she's going to be in next season, but I would have liked a little tease to see what it may look like.
She will be in next season.
She, yes. Yeah, she is.
Yeah, she's been confirmed. I'm just scared that they're going to slot her into E1 Laurel's role on the team, especially as her redemption story seemed to end with her in E1 Laurel's place morally, and she even has her suit and weapon. I wish we got to see her as an anti-hero or just a little morally gray before we got this, though. I really hate that Cicada plot continued into the Flash finale. It took up time that could have been used for more Thawne shenanigans. Also, I really wanted to see more of this timeline's future. I wanted to see how future Iris was doing and know more about the chip she put in Nora. Like, who helped her? Why? Who else knew? What's Cisco up to? Did Vibe finally get a drink named after him in Jitters? I hope he did. Yeah, we'll probably never get that now that he took the cure, which I hate so much. The idea he couldn't be happy and be Vibe is stupid, but he could have just... but he could have, like, just not been Vibe anymore. Like, getting rid of his powers was an actual choice they made him do. Even though his entire journey has been about not fearing his powers and becoming a hero, that was his destiny, and he should have been allowed to have that as his legacy. Mm-hmm. It sucks because it feels regressive. He shouldn't have to be stripped of a character journey for the writers to remember to utilize his skills he had in season one. And there was still so much left to do with them. Why bring Vibe on a show about the Flash if you're not going to explore his connection to the Flash and the Speed Force? Carlos doesn't seem to be leaving, so I do have some hope that this is part of a plan. I hope there is a plan.
Plan is to not let him
I'm kind of like, what,
and
yeah,
his
like
powers back after.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, crisis is coming up. You can't take yourself down one meta. You probably gonna need him. So I wonder if, like, the monitor will just, like, undo it.
Interesting. All right. Shy One sent us some feedback as well. Well, I'm not sure if this is a popular opinion or not, but I enjoyed the season finale. I primarily enjoyed the last 30 minutes of the episode. Mm-hmm. The first half had some good moments, but I've been over the Cicada storyline for a while. I get where they were going with the Cicada story and how it tied into Reverse Flash, but they just made the characters act so cringy. Even in this episode, Cicada 2 had cringy moments, just too much overacting and overdoing it. As for the episode, I cried for the first time this season during the Nora disappearing scene. Grant and Candace acted their asses off, and I felt the emotion of that scene. Just another example of how much better the show is when they have scenes together. I'm not sure if anyone was surprised that Nora would disappear due to the change in timelines, but it was still a sad moment to see Barry and Iris come to terms with losing their daughter. Yes, we know they are going to have the Tornado Twins in the future, but it was still a death to them because the Nora that they've gotten to know over the past year no longer exists. So it's still a traumatic thing to experience, regardless of the fact that we will get the Tornado Twins out of it, and despite the fact that Nora was frustrating at times during the season. The video of Nora at the end was sweet, and again, seeing the emotions on Barry and Iris's face as they watched the video is really good. Their chemistry is amazing, and I felt their devastation. She asks if we're going to be making a podcast talking about the season overall, and yes, we are, maybe in 2 weeks after Supergirl and Doom Patrol end. Yeah, so she stated before the back half didn't feel cohesive. Cicada was too weak a villain to go a full season, and some of the nonsense they did during the season got really old really quick. I completely agree with that. Thank you, Shy. Moving on to Mara. I found the arc leading up to the destruction of the dagger problematic. For one, let's talk about the metacure, which honestly is not a cure, and they should stop calling it a cure and call it what it is, a metahuman eraser. Very true.
Yeah. Being meta is not a disease.
Yeah. It seems so vastly unethical to call this a cure, as if Barry, for example, would consider getting rid of his speed a cure, because he absolutely would not. There's been no indication up until this point that the effects of the metahuman eraser can be negated by the dagger. In fact, the stupid dagger was in the med bay when Cisco and Caitlin administered the eraser on Orlin earlier in the season, and the eraser seemed to work fine, but suddenly the dagger negates the impact of the eraser. That is blatantly senseless. This is why the Cicada storyline has been so bad, because it's simply been yet another means to bring Thawn back into the fray so we get all this convoluted rubbish writing leading up to his return. The fact that the dagger has to be vaporized for the eraser to work on Little Grace is so stupid, and I think the writers could have found some other way for the dagger to be destroyed and Thawn released. Thawn's release marked the turning point in this episode. No ridiculous face heel turns here. I'm looking at you, Bells of Surrender in King's Landing. The shade. Just reinforcement that Thawn is a master manipulator. They need to stop bringing back the trauma of Cisco dying. I'm physically cringing how every time they bring it up. At least the team got some solid beatings in, which is nothing more than Thawn deserves. Now for the main event. The emotional blowout of this episode. Before I really get into it, Candace Patton deserves a raise. I don't even have the words to articulate how phenomenal she was in this episode, but every single time she appeared on screen, I was captivated and emotionally drained. I do have lots of praise for Grant and Jessica, both of whom were wonderful in this episode as well. I've really been impressed by Jessica this season. She is so uninhibited and endearing, and I want to see her again as Nora / Dawn in the new timeline. Grant, of course, had the waterworks on full display, but Candace was truly the powerhouse of this episode. No, scratch that. The whole season. I completely agree. I've seen so much praise for her acting after the finale on Twitter, and it makes my heart full knowing that she's getting the recognition she has always deserved. Yes. Absolutely. As for Barry and Iris, the first half of season 6 is going to be tough for them as they grapple with Barry's impending disappearance. Finally, they can talk about it. but they're going to be okay. The time vault scene proved to me that they can overcome anything because they are each other's strength and they are there to hold the other up always, come what may. And they're going to have the Tornado Twins. We'll probably see their birth in the season 6 finale.
I think it's going to be a mess in season 6.
Yeah, like, for sure, just for sure.
Over Nora, and then like they notice the timeline change.
Yeah, and then
like,
just do a Barry, and then Barry's gonna disappear for however long, and then just come back. It's gonna be, but at least he won't disappear for 25 years,
right?
Which is nice,
for like a month.
Yeah, I've sorely missed West Allen, and this finale is proof that when they have scenes together on their own, the episode is that much better. So Crisis on Infinite Earth, here we come. I wonder if Crisis will be the official end of the Thawne chapter, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Thank you, Oliver Queen, for your sacrifice. Barry and Carl will disappear for a bit, but because of Ollie, they will be back in no time, and Barry and Iris will finally break free of this dire future that's been hanging over their heads since the pilot. Yes. Paulina, first things first, Sing knows, which we all already knew, but it's nice that Barry knows too. Yes, absolutely. I feel like this has been a running gag where Sing pops up towards the end of season finales and dubiously hints at knowing that Barry is the Flash, and here he straight up confirms it. Loved how nonchalant he was about it too, and Captain Jill West has a very nice ring to it. I hope this is not the last we've seen of Sing, though. I agree. I hope that it's not the last of him. The end of Grace was as lackluster as Grace has been, so it was as expected. Still, I've got to say, Grace had 3-0 on Killer Frost upon her demise. The so-called key to defeating Cicada flopped within 5 seconds. That's very accurate. I'm glad Team Flash got to really beat Thawne up a bit, because it just feels like in the past he continuously defeats them and they can't get a solid punch in. I really felt all the rage against his nemesis who has haunted their past, present, and future when they all fought him together. But Dan, when Thawne told Iris it was always a pleasure and mockingly apologized to Cisco for reverse flashing him, I wanted to rip his head off myself. The time vault scene between Barry and Iris was demonstrative of what has sorely been missing this season, the emotional heart. Yes, Barry and Nora served that purpose, but it just did not have the foundation to provide what the Flash has excelled at in the past, gut-wrenching emotional moments. I haven't felt more emotions as I did watching Barry and Iris softly grieve together since season 3. That scene, in fact, felt eerily like the time vault scene in the season 3 finale, when Barry and Iris softly reflect on Iris being alive and them still having their future together. Because even though it tonally a bit different, both scenes reinforce one thing. Barry has lost everything, but he's able to move forward and love and be heroic and be comforted because he has Iris. She's his one constant always. I do think that to a degree, while I fully expected this to happen, it may seem a waste to make the season so Nora-driven, as it was truly a story from her perspective, only to erase her, but I won't complain about that because I think the finale hit the emotional notes that it needed to. Because yes, while Jessica Parker Kennedy will return someday as the new Nora slash Thawne with her twin brother, the infamous Thawne Allen, this Nora, whose story the season was dedicated to, is gone for good. So it's a little frustrating from a narrative perspective, especially given that West Allen really didn't get to parent together as much as they ought to have, nor did Iris get her due as a mother during this arc. But as I said, I will let this one go for now, because overall, while it wasn't the best finale, it was very solid and fixed a lot of the issues with this season. Finally, we have Shang, who sends us some Supergirl feedback. The fight was so bland.
Thanks for your comments on Flash Podcast, by the way.
Oh, yay.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it. And to anybody else who dropped in and said nice things, we appreciate you too, and love that you did that.
I'm glad to feel you actually listen.
I know.
They like us. They really like us.
Shang thinks the fight was so bland, the angles were so bad, and the bright to dark transition made it look as if they just switched off the lights. I still put Rain versus Kara as the best fight sequence the writers have done. Take the Grass is actually an Easter egg from the comics where Superman absorbed photons from sunflowers to live. Oh, that's nice. I didn't know that.
Thank you, photosynthesis.
I felt they should have gone with maybe Alex praying to Mother Nature to parallel Superman praying to Mother Nature for strength to heal Kara for a better emotional scene. Take the Grass really took me out of the desperation Alex felt. The Danvers Sisters is the best love story on Supergirl. Anyone who says otherwise can fight me to the death. That is true. They are the OTP of Supergirl. Here's to Lex and Lockwood getting punched into a coma by Kara and Lena finally knowing the truth in the finale, or I'm going to be Boo Boo the Fool. Legends of Tomorrow feedback. Why does the finale look like the greatest showman gone wrong?
Oh my God.
Uh-oh.
He also has Arrow Season 7 feedback. Never thought I would say this, but this season outsold. I didn't make so many broody faces, and I'm glad I powered through watching the show after almost giving it up in Season 5. They really won Most Improved Award. I like the revamped writer's room bringing in newer ideas for plots. Even though sometimes the writing is inconsistent, it still felt like it flowed. I still never really liked Oliver, and I'm sad I won't be seeing Felicity next season. Whew, that's the end of that. There's a lot more to your feedback that will be posted to Tumblr, but that was just the short version. So with that said, we will be moving into our actual podcast. As usual, the format is Supergirl and Arrow on side A, The Flash Legends and Doom Patrol on side B, likes, dislikes, Lady with Gumption of the Week. And this week, Jessica is your host. Take it away.
Yay! I wonder if we have any Doom Patrol fans. Like, where's that feedback?
Yeah, right.
Do you guys not watch?
Yeah, we are the only ones who watch Doom Patrol.
Tragic.
There's no one else.
They don't pay for that service. Okay, so side A, Supergirl.
Speaking of Doom Patrol, actually, because of the paid service, IGN will have it on their YouTube channel for 1 week for free, the pilot episode. So you can go check that out and see. Ooh. If you are interested, you can go and watch the rest of it.
You should be interested because it's really, really good. So go check that out. Okay, so side A is Supergirl and Arrow, Gift of Focus / Mark of 4. Over on Supergirl, Supergirl battles Red Daughter. Determined to find a way to extract Har-El, Lena turns to an unlikely source for help, Lillian Luthor, which is her mother. She also kills two birds with one stone since it's Mother's Day and celebrates it by drugging Lillian and forcing / gifting her a baby True Seeker as a bracelet. Meanwhile, Alex, in the middle of Netflix and chilling with Kelly, realizes she's missing parts of her memory. Kara comes face to face with Red Daughter and the two engage in an epic battle. All that was missing was them ripping each other's costumes until they were indistinguishable to other people and forcing Alex to choose which one of them to shoot. But instead of that, Red Daughter flies off and Alex arrives just in time to remember her sister, Supergirl, and encourages Kara to photosynthesize her way back to life. Meanwhile, Brainy, Nia, and John set out to track down aliens who have been abducted by Lex, so obviously the most logical plan is to get captured themselves. Plans go awry when the evolutionary mistakes known as the Children of Liberty accidentally reset Brainy to factory settings. This episode, written by...
Evolutionary mistakes.
This episode was directed by Alexis Ostrander, with story by Lindsay Sturman and teleplay by Gabriel Yanis and Eric Carrasco in his last episode for Supergirl. Marie Kondo style. So what sparked joy for you?
What sparked joy? Well, I figured I could give May a break after reading all that feedback and go first. What are your feelings on that? Does that spark joy for you, May?
It does spark joy. Bless you. Carry on.
Okay. So, I very much, I like Kara versus Linda. I thought that Melissa did some good work, you know, playing both sides. And it's nice to see that Kara is right about her clone in a way. Like, we see that Linda is doing what she thinks is right and that she's doing it for the good of the people as far as she knows. Even right. Kara bringing up Mikhail, or however you say his name, like, is a double-edged sword because she's bringing up trying to appeal to her human side, but Linda is fighting for him and people like him because they blamed it on the Americans, right? They blamed his quote-unquote death, when he's not even dead, on the Americans. So that was, like, a nice show that they're kind of, like, coming from similar places but on opposite sides. Also, I like that the stakes felt very high this episode. I think they did a really good job of making Lex's plan come together. Like, ever since he's come into the picture, it's really pulled the show all in one direction. Everyone is working in one way or another to stop him. So even when he's not on screen, which he has been not been up for most of his run, he's still making the show feel coherent and feel urgent, which is great. So yeah, at the very end, like, you see how everything's come together, and now, like, you know, things are more dire than ever. So I'm very much looking forward to how that plays out in the finale. I enjoyed Lena and Lillian a lot more than I thought I would. I like that Lena is finally kind of, like, playing the same game that her brother and mother are, but she's doing it for good reasons. And I loved that, you know, A, Lillian said she loved Lena and she had the truth serum, or truth baby, whatever they call that thing. The truth seeker. So presumably she's telling the truth. And B, that she saved James despite thinking Lena hadn't really poisoned her. So it's like she was actually, she was like, you didn't really poison me, but she still did what her daughter wanted, which I liked a lot. I like that Lena and James are on the same page now. It feels like they've come back together, but they didn't like stop to check what the status of the relationship was. So it's just like, okay, let's just move forward from here. And I like that. There wasn't like weird, let's talk about this and stop the action. Also, I loved Lena standing up to Lockwood. I thought that she was super badass. Jesse Rath killed it this episode. He was really great playing both sides of Brainy. I really fell for him throughout the entire, like, when he was being tortured. And then, you know, like, he, like, depicted the entire gamut of human emotion, as Eric Krasko said, before going full synthetic. I thought that was really, really well done. And Nicole Maines did a great job, like, Nia, when Nia thought that Brainy was going to confess, and then he just, like, threw her to the wolves, like, oh, my heart broke for her. I felt real bad. Finally, another MVP of the episode was Kyler Lee. I like how they played Alex's emotional wounds and how that became part, like, the adoption storyline from last week became part of her remembering Kara this week. And yeah. How, once again, Kelly was on hand to be like, oh, this is the psychological reason for why this is happening to you. And that is true, but also it leads into the supernatural reason this is happening to you. So I like that they combined, kind of like they did with the James storyline and the PTSD versus his powers. Liked Alex working alongside Supergirl and her memories returning because of Supergirl being in danger and reminding her of Kara. I also thought it was a nice way to bring back her memories and make it a really dramatic moment without making it the dramatic falling out that we are certain Lena and Kara will have. So there you go.
Beautiful. I definitely like the dichotomy in the portrayal of Kara and Linda. Like, I also like that Kara picked up on the fact that Linda is obviously doing these things because of Lex's influence and that she's not completely far gone because she's moved to National City and seems to want what Kara has. And I like that Kara brought up Mikhail too, and tried to get through to her in that way because it's someone she cares about just as much as Kara cares for Alex. And I agree that Melissa did a great job portraying both characters. I fully expect Linda to change course in the finale after what happened here, even if they fought. But speaking of the fight, it was nice
to be alive.
Yeah, well, yes. I hope so. Or at least if she is going to die, she will change before she dies, which will make it even more sad. But anyway, with regards to the fight, it was nice to finally give Kara something meaty as Supergirl and a great way to get her back in her suit. Like, finally someone she can actually fight who is physically just as formidable as she is this season. I know that she fought Rain last season. I really like that Alex started remembering bits and pieces of Kara as Supergirl on her own and enjoyed seeing young Kara and Alex again. I think that casting is just really great. It was really heartbreaking to hear Jean say that Alex getting her memories back would fracture her mind, but I liked the way the writers decided to execute the story and make it so Alex remembers on her own because of the high-stakes situation and losing Kara. And speaking of losing Kara, the scene when her heart stopped and Alex was begging her to come back, like, gutted me emotionally. Kyler is so good in these kinds of scenes, and I really felt the pain she was going through, even though I knew Kara wasn't really dead. All the flashbacks and emotions were a lot, and she knocked it out of the park, proving, once again, like I said, Kara and Alex's relationship is the heart of the show, the OTP. And then using photosynthesis to bring her back was a really nice touch, actually, because I did not expect that, even though it was really weird how it got dark all of a sudden. I enjoyed seeing Lena and James speak to each other again, and they teamed up to stalk Lockwood, which made it even better. It's like, hey, weird date night, you know? I think the second strongest scene was definitely Brainy's unintentional reprogramming. Like Eric Carrasco said, he made a Jesse Rath appreciation thread on Twitter and discussed how they just wrote something simple for the page, but that Jesse went into more detail to get the scene right. And basically, I completely agree with Eric. Jesse Rath nailed that scene, and all the emotions I felt when he got rebooted were really unexpected. Like, he's been one of the highlights for the season, and in just one scene, Brainy regressed into his former and original form. And then he played, like, the newly detached Brainy so well. So, like, there's a big distinction between them, and it was really disheartening and tragic the way it played out, and that's thanks to his performance. And then finally, I liked Lena being smart and not trusting her mom enough, so she used a truth serum on her, and Lena wasn't expecting Lillian to tell her she loved her, and neither did I, so that took on an interesting turn.
Yeah, I think because didn't Eric say in his Twitter thread that Jesse, he even like went to like either comic sources or old Legion movies or something like that and picked out like little Easter egg of like lines and stuff to say and the like how he went through like all of the gambit of emotions and everything. It's really, really cool. So if you go to Eric Carrasco's Twitter page and scroll down, you can read about that there. But for me, my likes kind of fall into like the same categories of the episodes as you guys. Like I with Kara and Linda, the whole, even like the whole hotel conversation and them finally like coming face to face and having that first real interaction with each other was really interesting to see like the different dynamic between the two girls. I really wanted to find a way to include Fatted Heifer into the slide title, but I could not make it work. But I just thought that line was like awesome. Linda's so sassy. I love her. I liked everything about that confrontation, and even like the calling the American Dream snake oil. You see like the different ideologies so clear. Like she had so many good one-liners. Fatted Heifer was my favorite though. And I think what I like most about that conversation between the two is that, like you guys said, Linda really thought that she was doing the right thing. Like in her mind, like all the praise to Melissa for switching up and being able to walk that balance between the two women that are essentially the same at the core, but the ideologies are so different. They're like so similar, but at the same time, so diametrically opposed. And I thought that Melissa played that really well. Linda isn't like evil, like Eve is. Like Eve is just like batshit crazy. But Linda, there's still at her core a sense of like justice. And like she's just living in the upside down where Lex is her quote unquote Alex and has influenced her mind so much. But she's still, like Kara said, at her core, she's still kind of like that lawful good kind of person. She believes that she's fighting for courage and hope, same right. way that Kara believes she's fighting for courage and hope. So it just makes it that much more devastating when she falls victim to Lex's plan at the end. And then, like, May, I think that Linda died already. Like, in the previews.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I was seeing. No, because I feel like at the end of this episode, there was something with,
doesn't
like...
Doesn't he say, like, Supergirl is dead or whatever?
Yeah, and he's holding Linda in his arms.
I must have missed that.
Yeah. So, I think she died. And I think at the end, like, you can see when she and Kara are fighting and she, like, stops, not because Kara is dead. She's like, oh, no, what do I do? But I think she's, like, listening for something. So I think maybe she heard an attack or whatever. And that's when it kind of started her, like, first little seed of doubt that maybe Kara was telling the truth and she went off. And then, you know, maybe we'll see how that whole fight went down with Lex in the finale. But it's just kind of really devastating that she is such a good person, but in the end she's still like duped by Lex and falls victim to his plan. So I want justice for Linda. Yeah. And then like another major standout performance, like you guys said again, Jesse Rath as Brainy. Just over the course of the whole season, Brainy has developed from being, you know, he's not the factory settings that we saw later in the episode, but he still was very kind of like analytical, very black and white, little boxes, more AI kind of person. And he's developed over the course of the season into such a more emotionally complex person. And I don't know whether it has to do with him being the target of racism and extremism on one hand, but also developing feelings for Nia on the other. So like both of those experiences that he's had over the course of this season, I've really like expanded his emotional range. And so it's been like a really huge year emotionally for him. And decision probability calculating comes less easy to him now because he has so much more at stake now. He has so much more that's emotionally grounding him that it's a little difficult to continue to have that kind of AI-like, you know, decision-making skills. He has friends, mm-hmm. He has relationships, he has a sense of responsibility to stand up for Lockwood on behalf of all the aliens. And I think in the future, like, he still had friends and stuff like that, but the stakes are so much higher and so much more concentrated for him now that it just kind of like ramped up his emotional evolution. And so it's like when you have all like, it's like on your computer when you have like too many things running on your laptop and so like the whole laptop starts shutting down. Yes. There's so much going on. Like that's how Jesse played Brainy. And I thought that was perfect. I thought it was a little bit weird why I understood why he felt like he had to like be compelled to truth bomb Nia about his feelings so he could like close that tab and clear it out of his system and so he could run faster and focus. But they also get captured very easily because he makes the decision to go with Nia's plan, even though logically John's was better. So that's kind of like a clear example of his emotions kind of tampering with his like logistical AI side. Like he's making mistakes now and he wasn't making mistakes before. So I thought how they showed that was all really good. And I thought the scene where he was rebooted was really, really great. Just like the range of emotions, accents, facial expressions Jesse goes through was very impressive. And it's kind of cool because you start out with Melissa and Cara and Linda. It's two characters that are, you know, very different, but they're also very established. And, you know, both of their character personalities and all that kind of stuff. With Jesse and playing Brainy, he's like, it's kind of like I guess you could say it's kind of similar to when Matt Leicester took over Eobard Thawne as like the original Eobard after season one with Tom being Eobard. He had to take someone else's character and deconstruct it down to its like original. And in this scene, like Jesse has to take who we know as Brainy and deconstruct him down to an original version that no one's ever seen. And so the fact that Jesse's able to do that and make, you know, reset Brainy so distinctly different from the Brainy that we know is really impressive, I think. And I think he did a really great job with that. And you can just tell in that instance, like when he does go down to like his base form, you're like, oh, wow, Brainy really had, you kind of understand his emotional journey just to get up to the point that we met him mm-hmm. in the previous season. The parallels, I'm going to take it as a Cara Dux breadcrumb because I don't get those. Let me have it. But I like that their stories kind of paralleled each other in that sense that, you know, with Cara and Linda, and even with you tie Alex in there and having to re-remember who Cara is, thought all that was really good. And this episode was oddly very coupley as a whole, because you have James and Lena that are back together or just together. You know, they're interacting again after being strangers for entire episodes. Kelly and Alex are still platonically, quote unquote, hanging out, Netflix and chilling at Alex's apartment. You know, like, I want to know like why they are together so much off screen. Like, who set up this date? When did they decide to have sleepovers, morning runs? Like, next episode, we're just going to cut to the scene of Kelly waking up in Alex's apartment one day and just like call it, you know, a day, call it normal. Like, I need details, please. Show more. And then speaking of Alex, I love that she's back in on the Cara loop and how she rediscovered Cara's secret on her own because of the power of their bond wouldn't let her forget. I thought it was a little bit of an easy out that John was like, you know what? Her memories are gone forever. Unless she rediscovers on her own. I was like, wow, that was a nice little escape route there. But I like the way that they brought those memories back in for Alex and how it, how they even used the failed adoption from the previous episode and tied it to that, because it gave Alex a legit reason for suddenly remembering now and not earlier in the season. Because you're like, well, why didn't she remember, you know, Cara's super breath frosting up Christmas episodes ago? It's like, oh, because, you know, it's because of this adoption thing. It triggered something for her, and that's why. So I thought that explanation was good. And then Lena's clap back at Lillian, leading to her being taken aback by Lillian's response that she loves her daughter. I thought that was, you know, because you're thinking it's going to be like a little sassy kind of thing. And like Lena's like, oh, so you're just saying that you care about me? And Lillian was like, yes, you're my daughter. I love you. So it was kind of, you know, both the audience and Lena taken aback by that a little bit. So it was a nice little sweet moment. But there may have been things that did not spark joy for us in this episode, and I would like to hear them because I am nice like that. I want to hear your feelings. What did not spark joy for you?
Thank you. Thank you for taking that into consideration. So things that did not spark joy include just the fact that Kara didn't warn Eliza about Red Daughter in the first place. I understand why she can't tell Alex, like, you know, hey, by the way, fake Supergirl is going to look like your sister. So that might be a thing, because Alex doesn't know that Supergirl's her sister. But, like, as far as I know, Eliza's memory has not been wiped. So, like, I think that it would be smart for Kara to keep Eliza up to date with all the happenings in her life, especially if Alex can't know. Like, there's never been a conversation between Kara or between Kara and Eliza about Alex knowing or not knowing. I don't know. I think this is very strange. So Eliza must not have spoken to them at all. And thus they bring her back just to put her in trouble, which is dumb to me because I don't feel like they've ever developed a Kara and Eliza bond in the first place. Like, to the point that Kara literally calls her Eliza and not Mom. So I'm like, do you even, like, care about her? Like, I don't know. It's very strange. It doesn't make sense. Especially because she clearly sees Alex as her sister. But anyway, the whole thing, it just, I was, like, took me out for a moment. But aside from that, while I think Brainy being reset is a great opportunity for Jesse Rath as an actor, I'm concerned for Brainy as a character, but especially for the ship of Brainy and Nia. Because, like, I would love this as a shipper of them, if I believe we were going to get some, like, real and juicy angst out of it, you know? Because there's, like, a lot of great scenes that you could get out of this. But so far, the way that they've treated Brainy and Nia, it's kind of like they like it, but they kind of see it as, like, a joke. And, like, I don't really know why. It's really uncomfortable. And I used to think, I used to think that, like, oh, well, maybe it's because, like, they treat it as a joke because, like, you know, Brainy's kind of synthetic, like he's kind of robotic, so like, oh, he doesn't understand feelings, lol, it's funny. But given how seriously and straightforwardly they treated his torture and then his reset, clearly they know how to get real, you know, how to play him as a realistic person. So Suara was talking about this when he was visiting, or he is still in LA technically, but we were after the Flash podcast, he's talking about how it makes him feel like maybe there's like a little bit of transphobic writing in there, like they don't want to pull the trigger because of Nia and not because of Brainy. And if the case,
we talked about that too, and he mentioned that. I forgot to say,
if that's the case, that would make me very upset with them. So I very much hope that Nia's feelings on the subject, because clearly we see that she wanted Brainy to confess, and she was very upset when he sent her off, parachuted her away. So hopefully her feelings in the finale will be treated with respect, and we'll get some of that ship material that you would get out of any other ship if they were in this situation. Otherwise, I will be side-eyeing them. And then finally, this is like sort of a prediction, but I'll be unhappy if I'm correct. I got a bit of a sense that like Lockwood's disappointment in Otis and Lex is like supposed to help him turn like towards the Supergirl side or like fight against Lex. Like, obviously it made him kill Otis or whatever, right? So like, I don't feel like, I don't need his pure xenophobia to be like exalted above Lex's just like random ambitions. So I don't know. I was kind of like, oh, I thought you were in this because you too hated aliens, Lex. Yeah. I didn't realize you were in this because you, like, want more money and power.
Evil, yeah. Lawful evil versus chaotic evil.
Yes, exactly. Like, so I'm like, evil. All right. I don't need this. So it's like a little bit, I didn't like that. But we'll see if hopefully he doesn't, you know, get redeemed in the final episode, basically.
That is a great point. I don't like it either. Mostly because I wasn't thinking about Lockwood much in this episode, but then I'm like, oh no, that's a good point. For me, overall, the overall lack of Jean in this episode, I guess, because I know David directed that one episode, but it was like a few episodes ago, right? But in general, Jean hasn't had much to do the last few episodes ever since he went to Mars, and I do admit to missing him a little bit since he's been such a large part of the season. So I hope the finale gives him some meatier scenes to work with other than just breaking Kara's heart. I also don't get what the show's issue with Eliza is. Like Tati said, they haven't really built up a relationship between her and Kara at all. And I think in general, over four seasons, she's just been underutilized throughout the entirety of the show. And in this episode, I didn't really feel much in the way of her life being in danger, even. But that's right. Just like, because
why did
the
they
show...
even have to go there to right. Eliza's house? They could have done the same thing with Alex in the middle instead of Eliza.
Exactly. Like, yeah, because like the show seems to have made it clear her relationship with Kara has never, ever been a priority. So there wasn't much shock to with regards to like being held hostage by Linda, because even afterwards, there was no reunion scene. There was no chat. There was like, oh, my God, Eliza, you were in danger. It was just like all about Kara and Alex. And I get that that's the most important relationship in the show. It's just odd to me, considering like all the other Arrowverse shows make it a point to have some sort of parent figure in the hero's lives. And Linda, or sorry, Eliza is like one of the only moms on the shows who doesn't really get a relationship with either of her daughters on screen. Right. So it's just really bizarre. And then finally, like, Brainy being reset means he and Nia will have to start all over again. And I'm really starting to wonder, like Tati brought up the Suara saying, like, it might be transphobic. So it could be. I don't know if it is an unconscious bias, but I am starting to wonder why Supergirl writers don't seem to want to go there at all. Like, it doesn't seem, it no longer seems like a slow burn to me, but more like a slow death for the ship. So, you know. Please stop.
And I think that's like, I think that's important. I don't know whether it is a little bit of transphobia plays into that. I would hope not. I don't know if it's unconscious bias in writing or not. But I feel like to play the other side, I think they always wanted to do this kind of trajectory with Brainy as like a character. Him, you know, the like ramping up the emotional stakes for him to then take that away and to make him go down that dark path. And so, for example, like, I know like a lot of fans when he came on the show were expecting to see Kara Dox, but to do that story for Brainy with Kara probably would have been more difficult than to do that story with Brainy in a starter ship, because I still don't think like I said last week in my predictions that I feel like now that I feel like I'm on board with something, that I can see something there, that something else is going to happen to blow up the ship. And instead of it being Brainy telling Nia about the future, it was Brainy being reset. And that was kind of like the blow up of the ship. And even if he does kind of get back to it, I don't know if that will turn Nia off having to have seen factory settings Brainy. I call it factory settings, but I don't even know what else to call it. The reset version or whatever. But I feel like from the start, and
he's like Buzz Lightyear in Toy Story 3.
Right. The way that the writers were writing it, it never seemed to me like they were that, like you guys said, emotionally involved in really having that be kind of a core ship on the show in the same way that they were emotionally, or at least like connected or dedicated to making James and Lena a couple that worked for a season.
Right.
They didn't have that same kind of dedication, I felt like, with Brainy and Nia. I think on the one hand, with introducing Nia as a trans woman and having Brainy be interested in her, or admitting like that he didn't think someone that beautiful would be interested in him, I think was a way to service Nia. And the idea that trans women can be appreciated and found beautiful by other people. And so maybe it was part of that, and then also part of the kind of story that they wanted to do with Brainy. I don't know. That could be part of it. So in the most positive way of looking at it, that's what I think, as opposed to like the negative side of it. But moving away from that, I would say, like, I liked most of the episode. My only nitpick, I think, was that a lot of this episode was just one group of people retelling the same information to a new group of people. So every time Kara, Lena, or Brainy had a scene with a new person, everybody needed to be updated on the events of the previous episode. So, like, while I get it, because how else will you continue the story if you have characters that don't know and explain that? But I kind of wish we could have, like, jumped post-exposition. Like, maybe instead of Lena filling in James in the car, we could see them telling Ben, and James is just like, wow, I can't believe what you told me about your brother off screen. You know? So I feel like that, you know, just repeating the same phrases for over half the episode was like, okay, I get it. You don't have to repeat it for my benefit. So if we can just, like, pretend like you repeated it for this character's benefit, that would have been saved some space for some other stuff. But yeah, I had the same kind of reaction as you guys about Brainy being reset and how that kind of also resets the Brainiest shit before they even press the go button. So, yeah. Predictions?
The show will end. Ben Lockwood.
The show will end.
I mean, like, the season will end.
Surprise cancellation.
We got this covered. Needs to just jump on that right there. I do think Ben Lockwood could die, but that's all I got.
I mean, that's what I'm hoping for.
I think he'll die. Like, he'll probably, like, apologize to his son or something before he goes. Be like, sorry about that, kid, and then, you know, die. Hopefully not heroically. Aside from that, I think that either one of two things will happen. Either Brainy will, you know, be restored to himself by the power of love, or he will be, like, the first bad guy of the season, but then be restored by the power of the season.
I'm kind of hoping for the latter, in the sense that, like, why would they do this in the penultimate episode and then just, like, redeem him and not actually fully explore? So I wonder if they... Because, like I said, it seems like they were trying to build this character arc for him the whole season. So maybe the beginning of next season is Brainy still being original Brainy and having to work back and bring him back from that.
That makes me so sad, but it would make for a good story.
It'd make for a good story. I think the better story is having him start out being not so good in the next season.
We'll see indeed.
Moving on to Arrow. The battle between Oliver and Emiko comes to boiling point, which ends in disappointment when Emiko is randomly killed by lessers because reasons. Some familiar faces return to remind you that they exist and were smart to stay away. Meanwhile, in the future, the old guard passes the torch, and somehow, despite her shallow character development, Mia Smoke is the key to defeating the Zetas and the success of the future. James Banford, in his obsession with women's model action poses, directed this episode, which is written by Beth Schwartz and Rebecca Bellotto. What sparked joy?
Well, seeing the model thing and then thinking of you when I saw it on screen.
Right? It's so obvious now. Like, once she noticed that, you cannot unsee it.
Yeah. I enjoyed seeing Curtis again. I realized after he left and came back that he was one of the only people who understood Felicity's jokes that she made while they were in the Arrow cave. So it didn't just feel like she was being witty to silence because everyone would just kind of stare at her. I think one of my favorite parts of the episode happened when Oliver thanked the team and said that he learned it took all of them, and without the team, he wouldn't have accomplished half as much, because it's true. And for so long, he'd been a loner and pushed people away, but it's a testament to how much he has grown that he's allowed such a large group of people into his circle of trust. And I especially loved the last 10 minutes or so. They were the strongest and most emotionally resonant of the entire episode. It really did make it seem like a series finale. I liked that the future generation is passing on the torch to the younger one and entrusting them with holding the city together and building it up. And I really like that final shot of Oliver standing in the Arrow cave while the lights go off. It truly did feel like the end of an era in that moment. And it was just really sad to see, like, his expression, because it was just, like, ending. And this is really lights out for him. It was just kind of tragic. And then Diggle telling Felicity and Oliver he loved them was really sweet, as was the montage of Oliver and Felicity living that brief but sweet domestic life away in the woods with baby Mia. And I admit that the goodbye scene between Oliver and Felicity was their best one ever, and it's the only time I've ever truly felt any, like, or really emotional over one of their scenes and over them as a couple. I think Stephen and Emily did a great job conveying what their characters meant to each other in the sincerest way that they could. And as far as goodbyes go, it was a memorable one. And I actually remember the song playing, which never happens on this show. Like, I was like, ooh, I got to go look that up. And I also liked William's goodbye to Felicity. I think it's strange considering he didn't really grow up with her as much, but his farewell felt more genuine and sadder than Mia's personally. And finally, I like that the monitor confirmed what would happen to Oliver in the crossover, if only because we finally got confirmation of exactly what happened and will happen to him and the time frame of when he went off to help with the multiverse stuff. And I definitely think like season 8 will have very little of him until the crossover. But that's just a prediction, early prediction.
Nicely done. I liked Black Siren, Curtis, and Bronze Tiger all coming back together to help the team. I like Curtis proposing. But yeah, in general, it was a nice way to show how much of a team and of a family, you know, of an extended family that Oliver has built up over the years and how far he's grown, like considering that he started off as such a loner and how many bridges he's burned throughout the years. But at the end of the day, there's all these people that are still willing to help him. And in theory, I liked the theme of redemption being possible with a little help from my friends. So we'll talk about the execution later, but I think that the season followed through on that premise in terms of at least, you know, being like, redemption! So, yes, it happened. The best part of the episode, definitely, like you have said and will say, were the final 10 minutes. Alyssa and Oliver's farewell to the team was beautiful. And I liked how that paralleled the older generation in the future, passing the torch to the younger generation. It is nice. It did feel like you guys, like you said, that like the end of an era. And then Oliver and Felicity's like cabin in the woods montage, ending with Felicity saying goodbye to Oliver, while we're also witnessing in the future Felicity saying goodbye to their kids at Oliver's grave, was another nice parallel. And Ruel's The Other Side playing was an excellent way to make me feel things and to make just like squeeze all of the substance out of those scenes that you can. I was really like, I was feeling it. It did feel like a series finale. I'm interested to see how they're going to wrap up the show, because they did leave, you know, it's like open end for a lot of the other characters, but Oliver and Felicity definitely, you know, it's a full story for them. So I think they did that well.
Yeah. And what you said, like the title of the song being The Other Side, and the context of the scenes being one Oliver leaving and going to an other side where, you know, it's like multiverses, but he's on the other side, and then Felicity joining him later and on the other side. It's very implied that she is like leaving this earth.
Yeah.
Not coming back. So basically, you know, a quote-unquote death, but you know, so I like that that's the song that they chose, especially with that being like the name of the song. It kind of adds another layer of dimension to those scenes. And I agree with y'all that those final scenes, especially with Oliver and baby Mia and Felicity in the cabin, were probably some of my favorite scenes from the series, maybe, because there's just so sweet, like watching them together and like them having that kind of moment. And as a overall series, knowing that that was Emily's last episode, I think they did her character a lot of justice over the course of this season. She's gotten like a complete arc pretty much from the beginning of the season and like the startup of her company and how that affected the future. And then using that story to kind of close out her arc in the future, I thought was really well executed overall. And I also agree with you guys about the goodbye and the bunker and how they set up Felicity and Oliver going away and kind of a mini passing of the torch, passing of the city, that they got to have that and they got to kind of leave on a high note a little bit. I And then just like little things, like I don't know who called Laurel. I guess, well, I know who called Laurel. Felicity called Laurel. But I like that Laurel was able to come back. I like that Bronze Tiger was able to come back because, and I like that he didn't die. I agree with Tasha that I like that he didn't die because that means that Ben gets to come back for season 8. And it's possible that, I mean, he's obviously going to die in Crisis because that's how Connor winds up with the Diggles. But it's possible that we could see a lot more of him being on the team side in season 8. So that makes me happy because I think he is a good anti-hero that they've rediscovered and decided to lean into. And so I like that they did that because I just like him as a character. Emiko, that probably goes into more not sparking joy. Well, okay, before we go into what doesn't spark joy, I will say that I agreed that the transitions were pretty mm-hmm. abrupt and jumpy, but I like what they were trying to do with paralleling the present and the future, because it kind of sets up that whole passing the torch thing that they do at the end from the old guard to the new guard. And clearly in this new guard, Mia is the Oliver. And so a lot of, and it's kind of like when you connect the parallels that they were doing over the fight scenes and the stakes for both of them. And then you ended on where it all began with the father and daughter, how they're like their connection, even though he's no longer there. Clearly his genes are strong in his daughter. So I understood what they were trying to do. The execution was a little funky because it was James Banford and could have used a little bit more finesse, but I liked what they were trying to do. But what did not spark joy for you guys?
Except for the final 10 minutes to your necklace.
Everything else.
Yeah.
Everything
except for the final 10 minutes or so. Yeah, most of the episode was really underwhelming. I was offended on behalf of Emiko, who didn't need to die, and they killed her off right when it seemed like Oliver was finally getting through to her, which I think was just trash. They really ruined that moment, and Oliver barely even thought much about it afterward, which was really annoying. Like, if they had done it last episode, at least he could have spent this episode mourning her and thinking about all the things that he could have done or something, whatever. The threat of the Ninth Circle felt unearned as well. They're supposedly this big, bad organization, but they couldn't even succeed in Star City because of Emiko's personal vendetta. But even that came off as tacked on. Like Tasha said, who the fuck is Beatrice? And why
right.
did she like, just why, decide like, to show up
and
last
she
minute?
Was over there and she had all this power to stop Emiko before. And how the hell did Emiko become the leader of the Ninth Circle?
Exactly. It just feels like a lot of plot points were just missing from her overall arc, and it just made the story seem incomplete. So her ending didn't get any justice at all. So they did her wrong. I still think that she could have been redeemed, or, you know, her death. Let me backtrack. In the end, her death didn't really serve the larger story because she didn't get a chance. Like, if the theme was redemption for Laurel and for even Oliver and for whoever, Emiko didn't really get that, and I think that was mishandled. Oliver and Felicity were still going to be in danger regardless of whether Emiko died or not, and Beatrice would have made sure of that, but there could have been like a way for Oliver to get her out of there. Praising Oliver as a hero in an episode where his sister died doesn't seem genuine to me, because while he supposedly protected the city, which I don't think was earned either, because it was just mishandled, all of that. He did fail at something more personal to him. And there was no time to allow him to process that. And then the larger threat of the Ninth Circle was very meh. And there's like, if they have all of these influences, like we saw in that one episode, across various countries, I don't understand. Were they trying to like do a Ra's al Ghul? I'm going to blow up the city to start it over again. I don't even know, but it was just kind of a mess. So it just came off as unimportant in the grander scheme of things. It was just all swept under the rug so quickly, like in a blink and you'll miss it moment, making their threat just feel not very threatening. I was happy to see Laurel and Bronze Tiger back, but I don't think that they really contributed all that much besides being...
We all forgot about Curtis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Curtis, like, he did. I don't know. But, like, I guess it was just more fun to see Curtis because we haven't seen him in a while. I don't know if that was the case, but just in general, it just felt like they wanted to have everybody back, but they didn't really give like Laurel her due, you know? And I really thought Ben was going to die. And that's the reason Diggle takes Connor in, which will be the reason. I just thought it was going to happen this episode. So I was just surprised. And I do think in general, Diggle's future story as it stands right now feels more the most incomplete of all the other team members. Roy's decision to leave the team annoyed me a little bit because they spent the last couple of episodes protecting him and doing all that they could to make sure that he didn't get in trouble. But it's not until after all of that he decides to leave and figure his shit out. So, whatever. Speaking of Roy, I'm confused as to how the police decided that Oliver and everyone in the everyone saved the city when they knew that they covered up Roy murdering those guards.
Thank you.
It just felt like it came out of nowhere. And it was absolutely unearned. So, like, I just want to know the moment that they decided that suddenly Oliver was a hero again. Because it means that they just wanted to give Oliver that positive note because it was his end in a way. But we all know what the future looks like. So vigilantes are hated. They're outlawed. And I don't get how they got to this conclusion. I think it would have made more sense had they become fugitives immediately after, because then it would have led to all the future stuff. So it just it felt like a loose end that wasn't properly tied up with everything we've come to see. I also did think it was weird that Felicity deciding to leave her kids after everything didn't feel more emotional, at least to me, because she didn't tell them where she was going, and it was frustrating. They didn't really ask, so it felt a bit off. Like, oh, okay, you're leaving, but where? So, like, they're never gonna see her again, and that just left me with some confusion. And I guess William forgot that he was mad at Felicity last episode because that completely got swept under the rug and wasn't brought up again, which is really weird. Considering that Diggle wasn't going to see Oliver and Felicity for a while as well, I expected him to at least give Oliver a hug and not just a handshake. And there's not much else to say about the finale other than it was just kind of underwhelming and boring up until like the last 10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with that. First of all, the Ninth Circle not only had a Dante and a Virgil, it also has a Beatrice. Like, okay, I understand. You only brought people into your group if they had something to do with Dante's Inferno. But
how did we get an Emiko?
Yeah, right. So that was just stupid. Like, one person named Dante makes sense. He named his group the Ninth Circle. He did not find someone named Virgil, and he did not find someone named Beatrice. Okay, whatever. That's fine. Anyway. Overall, the Ninth Circle was garbage, aside from their birth names or given names. Like, it never felt like a large-scale threat. I never really felt invested in that. I didn't think they were going to go anywhere. Like, if I'm talking about stakes for all these shows, Supergirl managed to make the stakes seem really high in, like, the last six episodes or so. And Arrow never got around to doing that, probably because, first, they're trying to make Dante the bad guy. And then that was easy. First it was Diaz, who was never a threat, right? Diaz was never a threat. He was replaced by Dante, who then got, like, overshadowed by Emiko. And, like, it turned out that Emiko was the leader all along. But then Emiko is so focused on her brother that I'm, like, with her group, like, I don't feel like we're doing a really good job of terrorizing the world because you're so focused on your brother. So I don't feel like she ever really had larger plans either than to annoy Oliver. Right. So I don't know what they're doing without her. Whatever. I just didn't buy into the Ninth Circle as a threat. And then when it came to the redemption, it's like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. So yes, they wanted to push the theme of redemption. And of course, they don't want Oliver to slide back into murder, even though he very nearly slid back into murder with his own sister, which was already stupid. But yeah, they wanted Emiko to die. There's no reason for Emiko to have to die. Like, they push her to the brink where it's like, oh, I guess she has to die now, you know? But they can't have Oliver be the one to kill her. So instead, they're like, Oliver will just talk her into maybe kind of goodness, but then she'll just get killed by her own people, right? So that she can be dead, and then Oliver can be successful, because what we wanted was for her to be dead, but also not be guilty, because he didn't do it. So I was like, well, this feels really anticlimactic and pointless. What if you had just had her be part of the team and fought the Ninth Circle, and then literally everything would be the same.
Join with Renee.
Yeah. Everything would be the same. Nothing.
She could have been a double agent.
Yeah. Right. Because like you said, there was no emotional impact on him of having lost his sister, which, right, you know, like, in a way, it's like, it's not like that hard to understand because you literally just met her and then 2 seconds later she was going to kill you. So, like, okay, you don't have to like Morning Sister forever, but in that case, why even bring her in to kill her? There's no point. It's just dumb. It's like they didn't think out the bad guy side of this season. But then again, they haven't since Prometheus. So yes, I'm not surprised. Anyway, I don't understand the Roy thing. Like, it sounded like he wasn't even going to go back to Thea. Because they're like, oh, Thea. And he's like, well, I don't know. Because I have to, like, you know, work out this murder thing I just did. And I was like, what? You have to, like, go walk around the desert alone to work out the murder thing? What is happening? So, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him. And I also, like, they made me not care.
Maybe they're already not together.
Right? He just doesn't want to tell Oliver. I don't know.
Right.
It was just weird. I didn't like it. I don't know what's going on. I hate it. And then we know that he's still just, like, wandering the island or whatever 20 years from now. So, like, was he just doing that the whole time? I don't know. I have many questions. Felicity? Yes. Felicity leaving William 10 minutes after reuniting with him. I just have to laugh. Like, wow, William, I'm so glad that you know that I didn't mean to abandon you. Let me go not mean to abandon you again. Yeah, right? Like, what is this? But then I guess she was like, now I've pawned you off on Mia. You better not leave him, Mia. We already see how that turns out. So yeah, that was a little bit.
And then William can't leave Mia either because you already see what turns out when yes. people slide her.
Exactly. Exactly. So it was just kind of funny. And then, you know, finally, just like on the whole, I wasn't even really keeping track of what happened in the finale because I was so uninspired until Ruel's The Other Side started playing. No, not really. Until the farewell scene from the whole team. And then that was really good. Plus, all of Felicity, you know, having to say their goodbyes, etc. That stuff was all good. But for the most part, I was like, I don't really care how this wraps up.
Well, can I add into my dislikes? Because I forgot to say
no.
about...
Please do.
Tati.
Please do.
Renee not having much to say about Emiko's demise. Oh! Because they spent all season, like, having them be partners, and she trusted him to a degree. Yeah, and then to have him just be like, yo, I'm sorry about your sister, man. I'm just like, okay, is that
sorry about your sister, man. Sorry about your fucking girlfriend.
I know. Robbed.
Yeah, she was more Renee's girlfriend than she was Oliver's sister. Oh, well.
Exactly. Yeah, and I feel like I agree with what you said that, you know, the writers clearly wanted Emiko to die at the end of the season. And whether that's because they got tired of her or maybe I feel like if she had survived in the season 8 and worked as a double agent, then you don't get to the disaster of a future in 2049. So
that's
the real reason why she had to go. But I also agree with you what you're saying about like the Ninth Circle not being that big of a threat. And I feel like it's because they tried to push Emiko as the leader of it and then have that be so focused on her going after Oliver and not actually the Ninth Circle having a plan of attack. And I feel like it would have been better when if they kept the original story and that she was, you know, basically being forced to do this to save her mother from being captured by the Ninth Circle, something like that, or she's somehow being conscripted into the Ninth Circle because they took her mother, would have been a more compelling story. Or her being, like, not the leader, but, like, a rogue agent, like, a rogue member of the Ninth Circle going after Oliver instead of doing what she's supposed to do within Star City and showing, because you could have shown, you know, her trying to manipulate the Ninth Circle's actual plan by focusing it on Oliver instead of like what the overall, and you could have shown like what she's doing versus what she should have been doing, and that would have given the Ninth Circle a little bit more of a world building feel, and they just didn't do that. And so it's kind of like you kind of don't see the point of the Ninth Circle. You don't know how Emiko, if Virgil and Beatrice and all these other people were out here doing all this kind of stuff in the background, how did Emiko get into the position that she is in? And why did they let her stay there for so long after she killed Dante? That would have been the time when I would have expected to see some Ninth Circle people come and be like, hold up, you're going off the script. So we have a problem with that, you know, and they just never kind of did that. So I feel like that, I do agree that they kind of fumbled on that regard with the big bad. And then like the other thing that it's kind of minor, like it's supposed to be like a good, well, okay, no, because I'll back up. When they are going after the bomb, like Team Arrow is all out being you know, self-righteous and we got to stop the bombs. And I don't know how they expected after, like, the whole thing, the previous episode of being accessories to murder, how they thought that they could go out and just, like, business as usual in Star City and tell people what to do and people believe them. Like, I know, like, the Ben, like, punching out the random city guy, like, standing up to Team Arrow was supposed to be, like, a hell yeah, comedic hero kind of moment, but I was kind of like, he has a point, though. Like, y'all are murderers, and I, like, on the news, it said that y'all killed these two police officers, so why would I listen to you? You know, kind of thing. So, and then the fact that after that, when they do the bombs at the Palmer Tech, aka Old Queen Consolidated, and I forget who it was that comes, I think it was Renee that comes in with all the police backup, and I'm just thinking, when? Like, when did the police say that it was okay that you murdered two of our own, but we're going to help you anyway? Like, just because Emiko killed you this one time or attacked the precinct doesn't, like, erase the fact that you guys lied about killing two other people the week before, and how that kind of just got dropped, and the police were like, you know what, we're good now. I thought that was odd. An odd way to, why introduce those emotional stakes for Roy, like, actually killing two people if it wasn't actually a big deal later? I thought that was weird. And yeah, like, about the Felicity and the saying goodbye to her kids, I do think, while I thought, like, the scene or the emotional way of the scene on Felicity's part was well done, it does kind of seem odd, because she knows, like, basically she's dying, except, like, choosing to walk into death, and knowing that that's the last time that she's gonna see her kids, or that her kids are gonna see her. It didn't really seem like they knew that she was choosing to walk into death, so from that perspective, it is a little weird for her to leave. Like, she leaves them with each other, but that she's not coming back would have been a better way to kind of make that a little less awkward, that your mom's like, bye, and then you never see her ever again.
Right.
Predictions.
My only prediction is that we are going to see, like, the flashbacks that became flash forwards will now be flash sideways, starring the Monitor and Oliver as they gather their multiversal team and prepare for crisis.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the main story is going to be the flash forwards. With, like, some stuff in the past, maybe involving Diggle and Bronze Tiger. But most of the story will be with the future generation, because they set that up. And yeah, I like the idea of, like, seeing Oliver collecting people or whatever he'll be doing, that Tati said. But primarily he's going to get, like, little to do every episode, I think, until the crossover.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I do agree that I think, and I forgot to say this in my dislikes, but Mia's centralization does not feel earned to me. Like, I appreciate what they're trying to do with the Oliver and Mia thing, but I've said before that Mia's personality doesn't really make sense to me. And it doesn't feel very three-dimensional. And I think that because of the way that they set up in the finale, obviously it's going to be flash forward heavy, but also Mia heavy, because Mia will be, like, the new... Mia is the new Oliver. And since Oliver is the lead, that makes Mia the lead in the future. And I don't think she's earned being the lead, but that's what she'll be. And then, how at the beginning of Arrow, that was mainly set in the present and had flashbacks to Leanne Yu, the present, quote unquote, for season 8 will be in 2049. And they'll include maybe, Zoe's like, oh, remember that one time? And then it'll flashback to the present situation or something like that. It'll be like the reverse of the beginning of the seasons. And that we won't see Oliver much at all until maybe episode 7 or 8, like, right before the crossover. Lady with Gumption for Side A. Do we have any nominations? Nomination time!
Well,
I'll say Kara.
Yeah, Kara.
Kara or Linda, or Kara and Linda?
Kara, because she was the active one in trying to go after her and then try to change her mind.
I would say Linda as well, or over, because like Linda's whole
Kinda
bringing back together with the Har and El, so that they can work at the same time. But I do think Linda had a lot of gumption in the fact that her whole identity and her full motivation for what she was doing is because she believed in courage and hope, and she thought that she was acting on the right side of history. And that was very, like, present. Like, she wasn't doing it to be evil. She was doing it for, like, a purpose. Her purpose was corrupted by Lex, but I think she had a lot of gumption.
Okay.
And she died this episode, so.
I accept this. Is there anyone from Arrow that I would give it to? I guess Felicity.
Beatrice? Random, just like that, just remembered, because I don't even like her character, but Elena in the future suddenly knowing how to like throw down and throw elbows was like annoying to me.
Oh,
so she's not her. She's the anti lady.
Yeah, no, but yeah, I would probably say, yeah, I mean, I think Felicity went out, you know, well, and I think it takes gumption to be like, I'm gonna abandon my life and go to the weird afterworld where my husband probably is because the monitor told me to. Okay. So there you go.
It's a weak premise, but okay.
You know what?
We can cut her later.
You know what?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know about Arrow nominating
me. Yeah, we can cut her later. It's okay. It's cool. We'll say it for now. side B, moving over to side B, the Flash Legends and Doom Patrol, consequences/plan Z/white space. Over on The Flash, their finale is titled Legacy. So over on The Flash, Barry faces off with Reverse Flash. So it starts with Barry performing a Make-A-Wish miracle on Baby Cicada 2, faces off with his oldest and most formidable nemesis, Reverse Flash. Cisco isn't dead, but the audience thinks he is because he took the cure TM. Sherlock figuratively dies by finally leaving. Dibny signals he's ready for the love of his life by opening the Dearborn case, and Killer Frost gets a new suit. And that's what you missed, Flash. Gregory Smith directed the episode with story by Lauren Certo and teleplay by Todd Helbing and Eric Wallace. What sparked joy? That suit sparked joy, didn't it?
The fact that they didn't show it. Listen, I have theories, but that's for later.
Oh my god. I actually liked like the majority of the episode, like more or less. I liked the first half just because it's what should have happened last week. So I was like, oh, this would have been a good episode last week. So, like, I liked Ralph taking one for the team, Cubist sculpture style, and Nora coming up with a decent plan to actually stop both bad guys or girls. Barry and Iris being fully supportive of that plan and helping her enact it, also being supportive of each other throughout. Nora getting through to Baby Grace, right? All of that. I thought, I was like, oh, this is nice. These are nice beats that should have happened earlier. I felt like this is what should have happened the moment that Ralph came to them with the timeline stuff last week. Mm-hmm. Everything could have gone from there. So that when they were forced to destroy the dagger at the end, but halfway through this episode, like, it actually looked like they were taking a calculated risk, right? Okay, well, we're going to have to do it this way, as opposed to just being like, I'm just going to destroy this dagger. Anyway, once Aya Bard was released, that's when the episode got, like, actually good for me. So, like, I liked seeing Nora and Barry reverse time so that to save the guards that Aya Bard had killed. And I liked how he pointed it out, too. Like, he was like, oh, cool job that you guys did that. Because it just also shows, like, he doesn't, you know, he's not concerned, right? He's like, I'm impressed, but I'm still cool. I loved the time sphere crashing into Aya Bard, especially if I imagine that Iris is the one driving.
Oh, she's totally
flying.
Driving that.
Yes. Also, like, I loved seeing, I loved seeing their lightning together as they were fighting, Barry and Nora's. And then when the red lightning came back and Nora almost killed Aya Bard, I thought that was good. Because we see that her time in the Negative Speed Force has real consequences, right? And it also gave us the opportunity to see the depth of both Abard's, like, callousness as well as his quote-unquote fatherly instinct, because it's like, I really do care about Nora, just like I once really did care about Barry or really did care about Sisko, but I have no qualms about sacrificing you for the my larger goal. However, I could totally help you out if you want to be, you know, a villain like me. You can just chill in the Speed Force. And or the negative Speed Force. I liked that, like, Iris and Barry would have been willing to do that, and then it was Nora's choice, like, to have to be like, oh, no, I'm not going to go out that way. And it was beautifully acted, especially by Candace, but also very much by Grant. And Jessica played the, like, serenity and maturity of Nora's choice very well. I thought that it was, like, that whole scene was very beautiful, both in terms of, like, the acting from all three of them, but also the way that it was directed by Gregory Smith, who I believe directed Flash Time as well. Enter Flash Time. So, yeah, good job with that. Anyway, Barry and Iris looking through Nora's notebook. That was beautiful. You know, the whole the fact that the Speed Force language came back just in terms of being, like, a way for her words and her thoughts to be preserved and not erased, I thought was really nice. Since we were all just like, what is the Speed Force language for? What is its point? So at least now it had a point.
They didn't have a point on her pants, though. I wish I had a point there.
Watching her goodbye video, I cried with Barry and Iris. And also, I was just glad they got a moment to themselves to process their loss and also speak of their hope for the future, you know, bring up the possibility of kids with a different outlook, without knowing, of course, what we know, that for a little while, we know that they will not be able to, since they will be, you know, having Barry disappear, but just for a little while. One thing that I liked for the acting only was Carlos's work in the episode. I thought that his scene with Camilla, like when he was like worried, concerned about what her reaction would be, it felt very real to me. And then the relief that he felt at her like positive reaction was also like, it made them seem like a long-term and root-worthy ship. So good job, both of you guys. As well as his sincerity in that final scene with Caitlin. Like, it almost fooled me into thinking that this was a good storyline that was the culmination of Sisko's character arc. Which, of course, it was not, but we'll talk about that later. Also, I'm glad that it seems like he's staying on the show. For those of you who don't think he's staying on the show, it seems clear to me that he is going to be tech support. Like, that's literally his job. Right. Yeah. So,
and you know, like, people that don't have powers can have places on Team Flash too.
Yes.
Like Iris.
Exactly, like Iris. And even Joe, who's still on the show despite not having powers. Yeah. I'm so excited that Rob is going to meet Sue. I'm so ready. I love that Sing knows Barry is the Flash and decided to finally tell him. And I love that Joe's going to be captain next season. So all that's great.
Yes, I share a lot of the same likes. the last half hour especially went all in, and I really appreciated that, especially coming off of a lackluster and forgettable episode last week, which we raged about. I think if this episode had honestly been what most of the season looked like, we could have gotten some great emotional stuff, but alas. The highlights, of course, were the West Allen and West Allen family scenes. Nora was truly being and acting so mature, and I wasn't expecting that when she disappeared. It was because she chose not to save herself. I think that's peak hero, and I get why she didn't want to go out that way. And she was facing the consequences of her actions, which is something that's been a long time coming. The scene when she disappeared really broke my heart completely, as I wasn't expecting to feel all that much. Like, we've been talking about her disappearing for months, but then it actually happened, and it was really emotional. The panic Iris has when she realized Nora had come back from the Speed Force and her pleading with Nora that they'd fix it was really gut-wrenching. So the acting was top-notch this entire scene, and I could feel all the devastation and the sadness when they just held on to her before she dusted away. It's probably one of the saddest moments of the show, and it was so well done. Kudos to director Gregory Smith, who decided to have, like, I guess Nora's particles or whatever come down around them like rain while Barry and Iris looked up, because that was like some cinematic type shit. And then Joe comforting Barry and Iris and providing them with hope that they'd see Nora again was really soothing. And I also like how quiet everyone was. Like, they were giving a moment of silence to acknowledge her absence. Candace was honestly a standout because she sold Iris's heartbreak over losing Nora so well. Grant was too, and I'll get to that, but like that scene where she
but yeah,
no, I mean, you know, But I'll explain why. But yeah, like, when she was left alone and saw Nora's notebook and then cried, it was so vulnerable and tragic, and like, please let her be happy in season six. Which I know I wish she won't be, but still. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the reunion scene. I'm just gonna say that. The vault scene was also really good. Like, Grant and Candace have done some of their finest work in that vault.
I think I actually tweeted that, because yeah, it that is a special place for them.
Yeah. Like, Barry coming in to find and sit with Iris was nice, because she's usually doing the same for him, though he's been generally supportive throughout the season. I can go into detail, but I loved everything about the scene, from the heartbreak to like the pride they felt and the loss of a daughter who won't be the same anymore because of the time change. The message Nora sent them was really beautiful and touching, and I loved when she called them her sweet parents. Like, and I love the parallel that they all send each other messages when they think they're about to die.
Yeah, it's so really dramatic.
Yeah, like, they cried so much, like red eyes. And I like that the last shot of the episode was before the credit teaser was of them standing together while Nora's face was like frozen in a smile at them. It was just really moving. Other things I liked included Joe being promoted to captain. I didn't think it would happen the very next episode, because I thought it was going to happen next season, but I like it. Seeing revealing he knew Barry was the Flash all along was really iconic. Like, I have been waiting for this man to admit he knew for seasons, because I know he didn't buy that, you know, Barry went off for 6 months somewhere for whatever reason he gave.
Right.
And now his speech in like 410 about the Flash after Barry was arrested makes it even more great, knowing that he knows.
The best.
All the Thawne stuff, from like his jail breakout to Nora reversing time and his fight with the team, was really great. Like, his showdown was like a weird reunion, and it was also super creepy, but also nicely done. I'm glad to see the team actually work together to take him on, and that it wasn't just Thawne running around before running away. Like, he had to fuck with them first and then get his ass handed to him for a bit. So that was nice. His comment about growing fond of Nora was super creepy, but I think it said more. He said it more to rile Barry up. And in that moment, unlike during the crossover fight, it made sense why Barry let Thawne get away, because he needed to save Nora. So kudos to that. Cisco's chat with Camilla was nice. Carlos always sells his scenes, and this is why I wish that they would give him more, because he is such a great actor and he's so underutilized on the show. And I really like how understanding Camilla was. Like, what I liked most of all was that she actually said he didn't need to tell her, because they've only known each other for so long. And that makes sense.
Queen.
And Camilla is logical and level headed, so Patty should have talked to Camilla back in season two. That's all. In summary, like, give Candace and Grant all the awards, because and like I said, specifically Candace, because I feel like hers had a bigger impact, because, like, let's be honest, she loved Nora more.
of the, like, emotional journey. Yeah.
And their arc was more developed versus, like, Barry and Nora's, even though it was supposed to be about Barry and Nora, but the connection was there, but it wasn't, like, as emotional of a connection. But Grant's performance was great, too. Like, he's such a great crier. But they do give their best when they're together, and I hope season six remembers that West Allen is the heart of the show. Like, the primary reason I cared at all for Nora most of the time is because Barry and Iris cared about her, and if it wasn't for their reactions, her loss wouldn't have been as devastating or as emotional. So this episode gave the show back some of the goodwill it had lost, because it centered them with Nora on the side, which is the way it should have been all season. And finally, I loved watching Sherlock leave. It was like breathing a huge sigh of relief. May we never see another Wells again.
Except for the one that Eobard is wearing his face.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. He can play Eobard.
Yeah. 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 But I would agree that we are done with the Wellses. And, you know, that's fine. Just, like, stay over on yours. Don't come over here. We killed ours. So, no more. I agree on the split between the first half and the second half, and I like all the beats that Tati was saying about the first half that were good, and they were good because they should have been in the previous episode. Totally agree with that. I think it would have been like a tighter season finale or season ender to do it like that. I guess I don't know if they ran out of material on things to do for Eobard to do when he like got out of jail, that you know, how do you prolong him running around in circles before he has to, like, escape or whatever? So maybe that's the reason why they decided to draw it out, but it definitely would have been tighter. And it would have given more time for to set up all of the season six stories. Like, you could have gotten more about Ralph and Sue. I'm going into dislikes, kind of, but any, yeah. Anyways, all of the first half beats were good because that was the ending that should have happened last week. I did think that the last half was definitely stronger emotionally. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it resonated so much more with like a lot of the audience. Eobard's escape, the how he escaped, seeing that kind of sequence, like him being expectant and waiting for like the dagger to disappear and like him almost dying and escaping in just the nick of time, and how he killed all the guards and then Nora's time reverse was like coolly executed. And then you rewind and all this kind of stuff. And you already know because we've seen her use it a couple of times over the season. So when it starts rewinding, you're like, oh, shit, I already know what's happening. I know what this is kind of thing. So I liked how they executed that. And I like that for once, Barry and Nora got over on Eobard a little bit because Eobard was very cocky. He thought, like, you know, y'all had your little fun, but I'm still doing what I got to do. And he thought he still had the upper hand. And then... Iris comes in with a time sphere and, like, knocks him on his ass. Like, I think that truly surprised him. Like, he was not expecting that at all. And she showed up with, like, all the cavalry. So I thought that, you know, for once, it felt like Team Flash actually got one over on Eobard. And I think even, like, the final fight scene between the team and Eobard was the best that they have ever coordinated their powers as a group. And you see how they all work together. And you're like, why can you do this for like all the other episodes? Because it was really cool how they all utilized their powers. No one got knocked out for someone else to be able to shine. Everyone's powers had like a efficient purpose. It looked like they planned it. Like, they had a strategy session and they executed it. So all of that was good. I thought that, especially with regard to Cisco, and it makes all the other stuff that happened in the story that much more upsetting, but since it's the likes, but especially how his powers were utilized, and then him telling Camilla the truth and that whole sequence of him being like afraid and then kind of like opening up and not being sure. And at first, like, she was really quiet. So it's like, come on, Camilla, please, I need this. Let me have this. But I like that she was like, that's reasonable. We just met. And obviously you shouldn't have to tell me right away. Because I thought it was weird how everybody on Team Flash is like, tell her the truth. You should do it. And they had only been dating for like a couple of weeks. And like Ralph was ready to like bring her to Star Labs and show her all the team. Like, y'all, do secret identities matter or not? You know, I don't know. And so I like that Camilla was like, it's, you know, it's a reasonable thing that you wouldn't tell me you have a secret identity when we just met. And that she was fine with it. Like, she wanted him to be who the person that he wanted to be. And I thought that was a really, really sweet and touching scene between the two of them. And I wish we got more of them overall. And that's another reason why that I think that he's not leaving and that he'll be back next season, because obviously he's not dead. And secondly, we'd get like a little bit of Camilla working at CCPN again, because when he goes to see her, she's doing pictures for Iris. So there's still a story there with Camilla and Iris at CCPN. So I am going to say that we are still going to be seeing that story. And hopefully now that he is demeted, we'll see more of his like civilian life, right, including right. Camilla. So maybe that's could be like an upside to it, I guess. I don't want to like rehash all of the good points that you guys talked about with Nora's, both of her goodbyes to her parents, the one where she does disappear. And then later in the time vault, they're both so emotional and so well acted. And I agree with you, May, that Candace in particular, her devastation, like Iris' devastation at losing her daughter, was just really vulnerable. And you see it in several different beats. You see it when she's like begging Nora to go with her dad into the Speed Force. That moment when she's just alone in Star Labs and it kind of like hits her again, and she just kind of like her face kind of like crumbles because she's about to cry again. And then in like the cortex again with Barry and watching Nora's goodbye message on the screen as you get interspersed with the different shots of all the other characters. It's just very, like, you could tell that what that loss meant to her. And it's like kind of a culmination of going from the beginning of the season and not having Nora like her, and how that tied to her relationship with her mother, and how she didn't want to be that way, and how upset that she was that a decision she made caused this relationship to fracture, and to finally kind of getting into a good place with her family, not just with her and Nora, but also with Barry and Nora, and having that relationship be good, and then to see it, you know, be the end. You really felt for her.
Agreed.
Yes. And I feel like there's, Joe and getting his promotion to captain. Yay, Joe. And seeing, finding out, I agree with you on all of those points, so I won't rehash it. But great. Kind of nice, soft ending to the episode. I like that they didn't end on a cliffhanger, because let's be honest, the newspaper aging is not a cliffhanger.
Right.
It's just facts. It's obvious.
So I do like them leaving it open ended was a nice way to let the new showrunner kind of just figure out what they're going to do.
Start fresh. Yeah. That was cool. What did not spark joy?
My biggest issue is Sisko's storyline, because I feel like it runs counter to his development and his characterization for several seasons. It's like they just have this like big neon power, like neon sign, I think, that's saying they have to get rid of his powers because otherwise Crisis would not happen, because he could just stop Crisis. Like when they knocked him out for Crisis on Earth X, because he could just teleport everyone back to where they're supposed to be. It's like that. They can't have him at his full capacity for Crisis. So they're just like, oh, let's get rid of it. And I think that they shouldn't have made him so powerful in the first place if he cannot use those powers. Like with Killer Frost, even though the way they did her storyline also sucks, but they've never given her the power she actually has, you know? So it's not like they can't do that. Also, it makes, like, the way that they do it, it reads like he's turning his back on being a hero in the first place, or like he feels burdened by saving lives, which is stupid, and obviously he doesn't, because he can be heroic and life-saving just with the tech side of things. Like, Barry wouldn't be able to do 90% of what he does if Sisko wasn't there, you know, at Star Labs making the tech for him. So I don't know why they didn't present an issue where the powers specifically are the problem, instead of just having him.
I think they tried to say, like, with when you talked to Caitlin about how all of this started, like, with Eobard telling him that about his powers, or how that was connected to how he feels about his powers or something like that. But I feel like the better payoff would be him be like, no, you don't control what happens with my powers.
And that's what happened in earlier seasons. He was like, I have to move past, you know, the way that my powers happen to actually feel comfortable with them as part of me or whatever, you know? So I don't know. They just decided to regress that. But I feel like if they had his powers be a specific issue, like he and Camilla's relationship, if it had been fleshed out for the whole season and we had actually gotten to see how overworked this man is, because obviously he has to stay up all night making lightning speed tech, and then he has to be Vibe and fight crime during the day with his powers, and thus he would have no time in those 24 hours to hang out with his girlfriend Camilla, right, who he's very patient and understanding and loving, but is like, hey, I haven't seen you in a month, Sisko. And then he could be like, I can only do one of these two things. You know, I can't be, it's like being two people instead of just being one person.
A better version of Barry and Patty season two.
Right. Like, I want to be with Camilla. I can't, you know, be doing all of this. I had to pick one. Then great. Then I'm like, I understand.
Camilla. That would have been a better story.
Right. But instead he was like, Camilla's like, it's cool. Do what you gotta do. And he's like, what I gotta do is not. So, okay. Thank you. It's very strange. But anyway, aside from Sisko, the fact that they managed to dispatch Cicada in the first half of the episode begs the question of why they didn't do it earlier, right? This back half of the season has dragged so much and felt so anticlimactic because they kept Cicada going and thus delaying Eobard. Because Cicada was never a really believable threat, the second half of the season was not believable as a storyline, especially once they introduced that Reverse Flash is what was behind it. We were all just waiting for the explanation of how and why and what his plan was. And they gave us that plan in like half of one episode, which was sad. Speaking of Abard, Sherlock should have freaking left last week with Renee. He contributed absolutely nothing this episode. All he did was re-explain the things Ralph already explained and then have a goodbye scene. So good riddance, Sherlock. I hope we never see you again. I hope we never see anyone but Abard from Tom again. And only on the condition that someone tells Tom that Abard doesn't whisper this much. I don't know what made him think he needs to be whispering all the time, but he does not. So yes, we've already like discussed our issues with Nora several times throughout the season. And the biggest problem I think is that they did a lot of telling instead of showing with her, specifically on the whole. She's the best part of both of us, or, you know,
yeah.
She made us a better person. Maybe she made Abard a better person. Yeah. She finally got to be the hero that we knew that she could be, and that she honestly came in as this week and last week. But somehow it feels like they kind of just like lost their way with her after like episode 3 or 4. And then just for like the majority of the season, she was just like a blob that they molded for whatever plot needed or whatever like little lesson that maybe Barry needed to learn about parenting. And then they just like found her again last week. So
there you are. There you
are, Carrie. Exactly. So that's like unfortunate that the emotions that we felt at her departure was all because of the impressive acting from all three and not because of the way that Nora has been written or what she's contributed to the show.
Right.
Finally, the fact of the big reveal, like the big change in the timeline that we've been waiting for, was just that Barry disappears in 2019 now, which we already knew ever since Crisis was announced for 2019, and which Arrow has already told us is not going to happen because Oliver has pre-sacrificed his life in exchange for Kara. It was like, that's it? That's what you're giving me? Okay. And they didn't even like go so far as to show anyone's reaction to it, which on the one hand I understand because it's like ending on a depressing note. Even though, you know, losing your daughter is pretty depressing, but it would be even more depressing note. But like in that case, don't even show me the newspaper. Like, why? We already know this. It was just very underwhelming. And it reminds me that we never even saw people react to him disappearing in 2024 to begin with. So it's just kind of like Barry's life is not very relevant. They're like, yeah, sure, Barry, see you next Tuesday. So that's all.
Yeah, like I get what they're trying to do. Like, oh, now that it's closer, we can get back to it and it'll be more emotional because we didn't expect it to happen so soon. But there's just like a lot of issues leading up to that. But yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. Like this episode, thinking back on the season 5 premiere, and this finale, I completely understand the themes of the season and what they wanted to do and where they were going, but I don't know what happened in between all of that to get there. So I do think that this episode wouldn't have been good at all if it weren't for the emotional stuff. Like the first 20 minutes were just okay, and that's mostly because they still had to deal with Cicada. But I wish they defeated her during last week's episode. Like, it was more of the same with regard to that plot. And it was just, like, we'd already discussed how tiring it's been to watch everyone get knocked out every time she showed up. Like, and their lack of, you know, skills and smarts when it came to trying to, like, put her down.
They can't defeat her.
She's so boring. Like, how can you not take this person to jail or something? I don't know. So yeah, it was just generally indicative of Cicada as a villain in general. Lame, boring, dull, whatever. Nora didn't get much of a chance to really react to the news that Fawn had been playing her this whole time, which was like a really missed opportunity because the arc didn't start earlier and was paced poorly throughout the season. Like if she had found out that, or rather after she found out that he had killed her grandma, that's when she should have stopped working with him. And then it could have been like a storyline of, you know, her trying to figure out what he's been up to and why he was trying to do these things to her, rather than like her finding out at the very last moment that,
like,
oh yeah, Fawn is like really fucked up and he's done all this and now he played me too because I'm so trusting. as for the Grace storyline, it was like really exhausting, and finding a reason for the cure not to work on her the first time didn't make much sense. I don't know which of the emails someone was talking about this specific thing and how that just made everything look dumb, and I completely agree. Like, Orlin did take the cure and it was fine, so there was no reason for it to not work here, meta dagger shard or not. And it's annoying that they waited this long to get a lead on her location, like just by finding a piece of wood that suddenly fell when she did. Like, she's been coming in on you for episodes.
She was tired of waiting for them. She was tired of waiting, yeah. So she left the clue.
And then their final showdown with Sakai was like really underwhelming too, because it took a valuable time. Chris Klein got his paycheck, but he didn't do much of anything since his character died. Like, he's just been showing up and just like, yes, do this. And I'm like, okay, all right, Chris Klein, it's fine. And I wondered why the hell they even brought Killer Frost to the cabin. Like, I don't understand. All season she's supposedly been the secret weapon to taking down Cicada, because the show decided she's not really a meta the way everyone else is, but then every single fight she's had, she's gotten knocked out after 2 seconds. So just, it's time to admit that this woman can't fight and is more of a hindrance than she is helpful. So just send her back to Star Labs, because that would have made more sense. But I guess they just wanted to give her something to do, because she had nothing in this episode. I'm not surprised that Cisco ended up taking the cure, but I didn't like the road it took to get there. Because after that conversation with Camilla, it should have been that he didn't take the cure, but since they obviously wanted him to throughout the rest of the entire season, that was like the obvious choice, writing wise. But she thought his powers were cool. So like the lead up to that moment when he finally does take the cure took a major and unearned leap. The idea that they created something that could get rid of someone's powers should have been a bigger deal than it was to begin with. And then Cisco was out here acting like his powers were preventing him from having a normal life. When that was never the case before. So the only thing holding Cisco back was himself, and his reasons for wanting to get rid of his powers was never fully fleshed out, like Tati already, you know, said earlier. So we just kind of got this weird half-assed version of what could have been. And then as it is, it seems like most metas are fine with their powers, and this cure's existence hasn't been utilized in a meaningful way. Like, it could have really... they could have written it so that they involved more metahumans in the city as a whole. And then Ralph getting hit by the mirror gun and turning into a block or whatever, I thought was a waste of time, because they could have just zapped him, like schmeins your way out of it, like you do all the time, and like, let's get back to business.
And it's like they had to have what's his face, Sherlock, tell them how to do it.
Embarrassing. Like, he's not even a scientist, and he's just standing there explaining what Caitlin and Cisco should do to help. Like, yes, the same excuse fanboys use to disgrace Iris for coming with logical shit, but in Sherlock's case is actually really ridiculous, because he just knows everything about everything all the time.
It's smiancy shit. And
yeah.
Somehow that's like, you know, the actual people in the field, like, oh, that's a good idea. Someone from a completely different field that should not know anything about this.
It made zero sense. And finally, the themes of the season were all in this episode. But since they weren't well developed throughout the season, Nora's sacrifice and wanting to be a hero only worked here because of the emotional impact and aftermath. But not when you look at the season as a whole. Like, when she was saying in the video about how she'd always wanted to be a hero, I'm like, but you just got your powers. Like, it hasn't really been that long. And it made it sound like she's been wanting to be a hero since she was a little girl, but she didn't know her dad was the Flash back then either. So it just didn't really come together like it should have. And like when Iris said that Nora was the best of her and Barry, I wanted to believe that, but it only happened in the last couple of episodes that she got there. Like, she was the best of her parents. Otherwise, she really wasn't. So I'm okay with, like, the reboot. And the stuff with Thawne was fine, but the whole season was made so he could basically get out, be free, and then show up in the crossover next season. Like, all of this was just for the setup for next season. So I just feel like a lot of it was wasted when they could have started the whole emotional storyline with Barry and how that's going to affect his true legacy, because it didn't seem like them having the focus on Nora was the problem. Like, she could have been a focus, but West Island should have been the focus with her on the side. Like I said, in the likes, like, that should have been what happened. Yeah, but in general, like, the writers just decided to stick to all their bad habits, and it just made for a very uneven season, even more so than like the previous season that we complained about.
And And it's so weird too, because like West Allen's child, the child of your anchorship of the show, is introduced in season 5, and that should be like you've got like a lot of material there. You shouldn't be a lot of material. So to see what they actually did with it is kind of disappointing. And the fact that, okay, so if I would compare like Felicity and Mia's relationship to Iris and Nora, and the way that it was kind of portrayed in both shows, both girls felt betrayed and upset by their parents and kind of went, you know, had their little goth moment or whatever, especially with their mothers. And then they have like a reconciliation. And I think because Arrow was obviously on like a crunch timeline with Emily not coming back next season, they kind of sped up the reconciliation part. And so you still get to see, even though Mia is distrustful of her mom and her overprotective and overbearingness at times, you still see the relationship between Mia and Felicity. And I think in The Flash, they spent so long dragging out the whole Nora is upset with Iris for mysterious reasons that you don't even actually get to see the kind of, like you said, like the best when Iris says at the end, she was the best of both of us. And you're like, Iris, where was that? Because you don't really get to see, we didn't really get to spend any time with Nora and bonding with her mom, either in the present or in the future. Because so much of it was spent on either her being mad at Iris or being mad at Barry. And I thought, like, the one thing that did bother me, in her very sweet and lovely goodbye video message, was that she said that she would not change any of it. I'm like, really? Maybe you should change, like, the first couple months of it.
And, you know, like, in episode 16, when they were talking about doing the list, doing all that stuff with Nora, we could have seen more of that. That's what we needed.
More of, like, the list, to make that kind of emotional bond when she does have to leave that much stronger. And I feel like they had to hold, I guess we can get into this in the summer series, the what made me think of the plotters versus pantsers dynamic is that Flash is so very on the plot spectrum that they have these hardline points in the season where twist is going to happen here, so that even if you have this opportunity where Iris and Nora should grow closer, because the change has to wait for a couple more episodes, it just stays static in that one default mode until the change mode. And so you lose like a lot of momentum and stuff gets stalled and you waste a lot of time. And they wasted a lot of time in beats of Nora's story that could have been more developed and made that emotional weight for her at the end of the season that much stronger. And the same with Eobard as well, because they're tied together. And then as far as like the big bad, we talked about the big bad Arrow and how the Ninth Circle is kind of flop villains. I think overall the issue with Grace in the second quarter as a big bad was also kind of that it's again that plotter dilemma, or not dilemma, but the issue with it being so plot focused and plot heavy and having to have things happen at certain times, is that it was very hard to kind of sustain her motivation or her vendetta and why she was wanting to be her legacy to be a serial mass murderer. Like you have the episode of her backstory that was really interesting, where they reveal that her parents' death was an accidental killing by Meta. And so like in that episode, her motivation to kill the person that killed her parents was because she was left alone, but then that falls apart because she's going to be doing the exact same thing to the daughter of the Meta mom. And that was never really like addressed or brought up, that you'd be doing the same thing. Why would you repeat this cycle of violence and loss? So that's one thing. And then it also doesn't explain, you know, again, like this is one Meta that killed your mom. So where is the, you know, all of the other serial killings coming in? Especially after the fact that her uncle has a change of heart and she kills her uncle. So when she killed Orlin, I was like, how do you even come back from that? It never really connected anything in her story. Like, you don't even know like why she came back from the past, like from the future. How did she get a hold of the time sphere? I feel like it was Eobard that did it, but that was never even explained in the finale even, that he's the one that gave her the time sphere to come and fuck with the present. That wasn't even explained. They burned through all of Grace's emotional tethers when they killed Orlin, and they had her kill Orlin and her kill the doctor that was there for both her and her uncle. So she killed all of the emotional tethers that would have grounded her into a story, so that the only, I guess that was so that the only redeeming thing could be Nora in the end. But when you sever all the emotional tethers to your villain, all she can do now is grunt and yell. So you get all these like scenes of her being just like really angry and grunting and yelling, and she looks childish, which most, for most of the season she is childish, but she looks silly, and it doesn't really make her very compelling. So I didn't like that, and I think that's part of the reason why she wasn't, neither Cicada was really compelling most of the season. With Sisko and how his vibe storyline, there's so much that, again, if you go from the plot standpoint versus letting your characters like naturally go whichever way the story goes, is that we didn't get to see the arc of Sisko deciding that he doesn't really want his powers anymore. It just comes in little bursts of, we need this story for the plot right now, and then it went away. We didn't really see his relationship with Camilla, like Tati said, and how that relationship, as it was developing, made it become more apparent to Sisko that both of his worlds weren't connecting like they used to be. It just kind of felt like there was, I can barely remember why it was brought up for him to be an issue. It almost feels like he was still depressed after his breakup with Cynthia and decided, like, to avoid any possibility of seeing her on any other Earth. I'm just going to, like, not meta ever again. And so, you know, we didn't really kind of get that connection to why he didn't want to be a meta anymore. The Kira storyline, it ended up being kind of shallow because you don't see the perspectives of all of the other metas of the city, or they didn't really go into the whole meta of why to be or not to be a meta. So there's a lot kind of like left undeveloped because they're so focused on the plot points that they need to get to end the season where they ended the season. So, I mean, disappointed, but not surprised that he took the cure. And then finally Eobard, I didn't like it. I didn't like him being creepy, and like, I get what they were trying to go for with the whole Eobard and Nora storyline, but it just felt very pedophilic to me and gross and creepy. and I don't know if it's how Tom was saying it or whatever, but because we also didn't really get to see, we got to see some of it, but it, you know, we don't really understand Nora and Thon's relationship, especially after she found out he killed her grandmother.
Right.
And the fact that what I thought in the beginning of the season was that Eobard was moonlighting as Mr. Niles at the Flash Museum, and so they had like a relationship. The man that owns the Flash machine that she goes to all the time, and they
relationship.
Like a real relationship, real world kind of like bond, and like, shut up, Tati. And like develop, like it would have made sense if this is someone that she grew up with going to the Flash Museum all the time, and that's how they have such a close relationship, as opposed to, this is a murderer in the prison, I'm going to go to him for advice, kind of thing. So his ownership over Nora, I thought, was creepy more than it was like sentimental or emotional. It was gross. Predictions.
I accept this. I don't know if I've got any prediction. Like, basically, I think that this is not going to happen, but we can all pretend. Like, when they realize that Barry's going to disappear in a couple of months, Iris and Barry can try really hard to have a kid before then.
I think they'll actually find out she's pregnant, like at the crossover, or when he disappears. But Was that your only prediction?
I don't have anything else. She'd be like, "You're gonna put a baby in me before you die. God damn it!
It's the only thing I'll have left.
Or I will kill you myself."
Yeah, I think that they'll find out about Barry's disappearance being moved up early in the season 6 premiere, and then deal with it up until the crossover. Like, he'll still disappear, but of course he'll return the second quarter episode in January. And I saw someone say that they'll use a flash forward so that Barry will still return in 2024. So that'd be like a 5-year jump, or 4-year jump rather. But I don't think that the show is brave enough to do all that and have Barry come back to twins who would be a few years old at that point. And I also wouldn't want to miss out my selfishness on all of that development. But I do think it could be like a new and interesting route the show could take. Especially since the crisis will probably kill off quite a few of the heroes that we know. But I think that there will be at least a 6-month time jump at the most.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to do and have it flash forward 5 years, but they would have to flash forward all the other shows 5 years too, and I don't think they're going to do that just because they wouldn't line up for future crossovers if they flash forward 5 years into the future. I think actually as far as like babies, the West Island baby front could go, it could also go, they have the opportunity to do a story with it going the other way, with Iris not wanting to have to go through the pain of losing another child again, and maybe wanting to kind of take a break from that for a moment, and then still finding out that accident, she's pregnant in the crossover.
Right.
But I think part of it, I don't think she'll be as gung-ho about like, knock me up right now, please.
No, obviously not. She's like, I'll just wait till you die and get someone else. I'm not bothered with all this.
And then I will be a nun. And I will not love again. Moving on, because we spent a lot of time on this, but moving over to Legends of Tomorrow, with things getting out of control, aka Gary and his hurt feelings running the show, with the help of Tabitha, aka the fairy godmother, Sarah and Ava concoct a bold plan to take back the Time Bureau. But when things go awry, Zari and Charlie must work together to discover what Neron's planning, which turns out to be condemning people to hell who don't read the terms and conditions on apps from the Apple Store. Elsewhere, Constantine is given a tough choice on who to save from hell, Ray, his current friend, or Astra, the young girl he failed so many years ago. And even when he makes a good choice, he still makes a bad choice. So, I don't know who wrote or directed this episode because I didn't write it down. But what did we like about this penultimate episode on the season of Legends? What sparked joy for you?
Finally getting a Charlie and Zari team up. It's long overdue, and it's what we deserve. And for the people saying she needed more development, I give you Exhibit A. Charlie got to express herself and admit her fear of going through with the plan. And I love that Zari was able to be there for her, convinced her to help, and then reassured her that she had her back, which was really sweet. So, and they had cute banter, too. Like, I love that Zari would like to be haunted by a ghost friend. also like that we got to see little Zari and her mom. It was really sweet to see them together, and also sad given that their world was about to change. But I'm glad that we got that bit of time to see what their life was like before all of that. Charlie pretending to be the fairy godmother was hilarious, but it was sad that she got left behind. For once, Nate got to ask Zari if she was okay, which was really nice. Like, unwanted crumbs. The fairy godmother, aka Tabitha, once again, like, stole the show for me. She's such a spirited manipulator, and watching her convince Nora that she wanted to help her fellow witch, like, I was like, is she really gonna help her? Like, is this happening? So yeah, I believe that for 2 seconds. And then Nora becoming the fairy godmother only for her to be sent to hell by Gary and then calling him a dick on her way out was something he honestly deserved at that moment. I laughed when Tabitha explained how she met Neron and how he's like much older than her. Like, Nora's expression, she's like, okay, I'll go with that. That's fine. Rayron, is that what we're calling him?
I don't know.
Like, in Rayron, a suit.
Rayron? Rayron.
Nay.
B-Ray or Rayron, basically.
Hey,
Nay. Yeah, well, Evil Ray in a suit was A+, and it was really creepy how he came off as, like, a charming businessman who just wanted to help. So kudos to Brandon Routh's acting skills. finally, I thought it was like really heart-wrenching that Constantine had to choose between saving Rey and Astra. It was cruel of them to use Kid Astra against him, even though I admit to not knowing much about his original storyline from his show. But then it turning out to be that Astra is now an adult. I don't really know how age works in hell, but that she wants her revenge on Constantine is super brutal. But I like the direction this might be going, and then it continues to give Constantine some good stuff. But I, poor Rey, like, no one wants to save him at this point. But that's all. I feel like I had something else, but it'll come back to me.
I liked the team's apologies to Gary. I thought that it felt like they were finally sincere, and like, yes, they did treat him very poorly for most of his time on the show. Also, I liked that they gave him another chance at the end of the episode, because like, that's what the Legends are supposed to be about. So yay for that. Fairy Godmother was in fact hysterical. Everything from her trying to push Gary into like more evil plots to send the Legends to hell, to her convincing Nora that she's not that bad, as well as, like May said, the oh yes, he's much older than me. And you know, when she eventually trapped Nora as a new fairy godmother, which of course was perfectly coinciding with Gary trying to do the right thing and sending her to hell to help Constantine, was genius. Nirei or Rayron with his iApp and the important lesson to always read the terms of service was very fun. And of course, I enjoyed Nora being forced to witness evil being performed in the form of the man that she loves. I like that they said that. And I was like, yes. Constantine and Hell, like, I felt like they handled it well. Like, first off, Hell still looks like the most punk rock of places, and people are just having the time of their lives.
There's a strip club in Hell, guys.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, people are just having a good time. But I still felt for him when he had to choose between Astra and Rey. So, like, I understood him choosing Astra in that moment. And, of course, the deception, disgrace, evil as plain as a scar on your face of Astra actually being grown up now and, like, resenting the Hell out of Constantine. All of that was really good. Painful for him. Looking forward to seeing how that's resolved. Finally.
Scar would feel very at home.
Yes. Yes, he would. Zari and Charlie, love them being together, hanging out, and also going to Zari's childhood home. It was lovely and a bittersweet moment of getting to see young Zari with her mother. As well as later on, I loved seeing Charlie actually like being the hero, like trying to rescue the magical creatures and even like standing in between, you know, the bad guys and the Legends. And of course, avoiding Nirei's kisses was great. She was like, no, can't right now. And he was like, oh, is something wrong with my breath? But yeah, that was really enjoyable. Mm-hmm.
I like that they, because it was set in 2019, they did include young Zari and her mom, because you kind of forget, we're on a time travel show, and we had this recently conversation with Nora, like, how old is Nora really? So I like that, you know, like in the previous episode, Nora is like, I'm actually 15 right now. And in this episode, it's in 2019, and you actually get to see, remember that Zari is from the future, and so seeing how her present is being affected right now, I thought that was cool how they included that in there. And it also kind of, again, because I feel like we said from the beginning, Zari and Nate makes no sense unless they're setting it up for some purpose. And this is the first part of seeing that kind of unfold a little bit, I think, subtly. So it's nice to get that. Nice to get Zari and Charlie, how that worked out, that Gary called the boys back, so Mick and Nate disappear, and it's only Charlie and Zari that are left to save the world. So I liked that team up, because we haven't seen that team up since the midseason. And her little backpack that used to hold Cat Zari now holds a dragon egg. So that kind of makes it, you know, Zarly parallel breadcrumbs from their last team up together. And now she's carrying another man's egg, but it's okay. It's okay. I'm not bitter. It's okay. The Tabitha, as always, Tabitha is actually like the true big bad. I feel like she's the best big bad of the season. And I thought it was really well executed how they played out her tricking Nora into accepting servitude as a fairy godmother, because I feel like it was something that Nora would have had to do voluntarily anyway. So the way that she tricked Nora into taking that on was really good. to save Mona, which honestly, like, it's another thing that I liked about this. Surprisingly, like, Mona and Nora's relationship has been a surprisingly positive thing in this season. I didn't expect to like or care about that relationship, but I feel like they have, like, a really genuine and sweet relationship. And so Nora willing to sacrifice and do what she needed to do to potentially protect Nora, I thought was really, Mona, I thought was really sweet. So I like that. And I liked what you guys were saying about, you know, Constantine being in hell and having to choose between Asher and Rey. I thought they really brought the stakes up for his story for on an emotional level. And I like that they remember Asher and they connect back to his story because it is so important to the reason why he is the way that he is. So I'm glad that that was included. Going back to Tabitha for a minute, I thought it just, this doesn't have anything to do with the actual episode, but I think it's just like kind of funny that the actress that plays Tabitha, she got to make out with Brandon, and then the next episode she has sex with his wife. So that's fun. But yeah, what did not spark joy for you guys? Oh yeah, sorry. Obviously, I loved Charlie saving the day to overcoming her fears and being the one to let out all the magical creatures, even though they were on to her and she could have left at any time and escaped because self-preservation is where she started. But even knowing that Neron and Tabitha were steps away, she was still doing everything she could to save every last magical creature. So that thought was nice. Things that didn't spark joy. Go.
I think it's weird that Tabitha had to be bound to Gary like the entire episode, and that subplot took away from the legends doing other things besides being Gary's torture friends. Like, I'm glad that they apologized to him. But it confused me because Gary seemed like Gary the entire time, much more so than he was last episode, but he was taking advantage of the power he had with the fairy godmother to exact revenge on the legends and make them do dumb stuff for hurting him. But like, part of me understands why he's so angry, but in the grand scheme of things, and considering how big of a threat Neron posed, and he knew that, his actions seemed pretty petty and like a waste of everyone's time.
Well, I mean, like, just to defend Gary Defense Squad a little bit here, like, he did explain that he was having them do all this dumb stuff because he was trying to stall Tabitha because she wanted him to do more evil stuff, and he's just like doing like the bare minimum to kind of protect them or whatever. But secretly, I do think there's some of that. It was like, I get to run the show now.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, right. And I feel like I missed that line too. So that explains some of it. But yeah, it was pretty petty. But Ava making Gary work overtime without pay is really ridiculous. I was like,
yeah, that's so ridiculous.
But why would you do that? That's so mean and terrible. And
and she said he had to like wash her car. Or
yeah,
her clothes or something.
It's just like the things that they made him do is really, really bad too. So I don't know. And I always have to wonder why people are so quick to turn on others in these shows, like in Supergirl, when the mob suddenly decided they were going to attack and then not attack. Like, the same thing happened here. So it's kind of brainless.
Yes, I definitely agree about the brainlessness, because while I liked Evil's plan, it's very hard for me to imagine just masses of people immediately A, believing in magic just because the woman turned into a werewolf, when that could easily be a special effect. Like, I feel like we have all been to the theater and we have all seen things that look real. And then furthermore, to be like, oh, Zari is a witch, we have to burn her at the stake or whatever. Like, I know that we're all very stupid and like, that's why Trump is president now. But I have to believe that we are not that stupid that quickly. So yeah. Also, I agree that Gary's like increasingly dumb and annoying quests brought the episode down. Like, first off, obviously it seemed really mean-spirited, even though I did understand he was doing it to not do what the fairy godmother wanted. But it also just like made the stakes feel lower too. Like, if I'm bringing up stakes all the time, I was like, okay, so clearly Neron is not that big of a threat if we can spend the entirety of our penultimate episode following Gary's stupid hopscotch orders or whatever. So, yeah, I felt like we were suddenly in, like, Ella Enchanted instead of the rest of the series. And then, you know, last but not least, most certainly, I don't like that Charlie is trapped and has to be at the, you know, mercy of Neron and Tabitha. So I hope get her out real fast.
I think that's we got an Anon that was mentioning something about, I don't know, it had something to do with legends, and maybe it was how legends and magical creatures would affect the rest of the shows and universes. If, you know, you got a demon with an app talking about magical creatures, and it's like, you know what? Because I think they're trying to connect it to Arrow, and I'm like, well, Arrow's got some other things going on. they hate vigilantes there, so I don't think magical creatures are the top priority. But also, like, metas exist. You know, the Flash in Central City is full of people with, like, magical superpowers, which is, like, magical creature adjacent. So even if magical creatures do exist, would it really be this shocking to people in 2019? If you look across, like, the whole scope of the Arrowverse, magical creatures is kind of like a, you know, the blip on the, oh, okay, that's nice.
They've seen aliens and Nazis from another Earth, so I don't understand.
Right. So, yeah, Neron kind of missed the mark with his app, I think, a little bit on that one. I mean, I get the thing that y'all are saying about Gary, especially when I was a little bit more annoyed at it taking so long for the legends to pick up on why Gary was annoyed.
That
I think that annoyed me more than him actually sending them on quests or forcing them to do stuff together, because I understood on his part that people can't tell him that you're not allowed on the team anymore because he is a team. Like, they have to do what he says for once instead of, so I got that kind of part. And Tabitha being tied to Gary is the only reason that she can stay. And so she's a prisoner to, like she's to the North, she's a prisoner to whoever is her charge or whatever. And if Gary doesn't, like, free her, then she's just stuck with Gary, trying to get him to do, like, whatever he wants to do. And he just wants to do, like, lame stuff. Which is basically, if they had done like the team building thing that they did last week with Gary, then it probably would have been fine. But they spent like a lot of this time being like so annoyed by him, and like I understood on Gary's point of view, and I was a little bit more annoyed at the legends then. But then, like, when the switch came and they kind of again kind of shit on him, and then he got really mean, then it flipped back over to like, okay, crossing a little bit of a line here kind of thing. But I mean, I understood Gary's point of view, so whatever.
Yeah.
Charlie being trapped. That's sad. Predictions.
Mona. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go first.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Mona will sacrifice herself to save Ray now that he's in hell. And now that she's in hell, rather, he's been in hell. And
she's not in hell.
You mean Nora, right?
Nora.
Oh, yes. Sorry, Mona.
That explains so much.
Nora will sacrifice herself to save Ray now that she's in hell. And Constantine will save Astra and then leave. I feel like he could leave the show afterward, too.
Okay.
To get his own series.
Yeah, I agree that Constantine will save Astra. And I was going to say, I think Nora will sacrifice herself, not Mona, but now I see you didn't mean Mona. So my prediction is exactly the same as yours.
So we're all on the same wavelength again.
Yes. My secondary speculation is that I think that the fact that Zari left the dragon baby with her baby self means that we're going to get like a Deus Ex Machina of some kind in the finale, where like the dragon that is now her pet will come to like rescue them in the present.
Oh, that's interesting. This is a big dislike for me that I forgot to say, but I'm really annoyed or disappointed, I guess, that the season finale and the way to save the world in the season finale is fucking Hayworld and Magical Creature Land. And then putting on like a show, like, I think it's like super cheesy. It's like ridiculous in the Legends sense that it's ridiculous, but it's also very cheesy. And like, I don't even like the concept of Hayworld in the first place, so I don't like that it's the key to saving the season.
Yeah, there's like a cognitive dissonance there.
Yeah. So moving on, finally, on to Doom Patrol, the superior ridiculous show. On Penultimate Patrol, with the help of Flex and Danny the Street, the Doom Patrol enter the white space to rescue Chief from Mr. Nobody, but Mr. Nobody offers them a deal it's hard to resist. Penultimate Patrol was written by Chris Dinges and directed by Rebecca Rodriguez. So, what sparked joy about Doom Patrol for you this episode?
I liked how we started with a little bit of backstory into Mr. Nobody, and it didn't take up the whole episode. It was just kind of like, this is where he came from. So the Brotherhood of Evil. Yes. the Brotherhood of Evil and his girlfriend, who wanted him to be like more evil than he was, was I love that because it just reminded me immediately of Dr. Horrible, which is a fave of mine. And also I love the shout out to Mr. Mala, who is, if you've read the comics, if you've read a comic before, you would know. Just kidding.
Oh my God.
But it's like, I'm sorry, but for those who read lots of DC comics, Mr. Mala,
tell us
is
how
like,
you really feel, Todd.
Okay. Just kidding. But if you read the last comics, you'll know that Mr. Mala is a really smart gorilla that is in love with Brain, which is literally like a brain in a jar. So,
oh, that's what he was. I thought he was talking about Grodd for a minute. And then I was like, wait, Grodd doesn't know French, does he?
No, it's a different, talking gorilla. There's a lot of them in DZ. But anyway, so that was really fun. And then I liked also how that was brought back by, I always forget this personality's name, Dr. Helen, Dr. whatever.
Yes, Helen.
You know, where she was like, oh, you know, this is why you're like overcompensating. This is your insecurity. So I enjoyed that. I liked I like that Vic eventually came to save the day and that they faked us out with it, because at first he's like, I'm going to go save the day. And literally the next scene he did. And I was like, how is that possible? He literally just left. How did he get here? Because it turned out. But he did come on, so it was nice to see him reunite with his real family. I also really enjoyed the reappearance of Danny the Street. Love that Flex and them knew each other, and that Flex flexed the wrong muscle and made everyone come. That was hysterical. Especially Cliff having to fake it so that he wouldn't, you know. The fact that he did it so that he wouldn't feel left out. And then also when he was denying it, he was like, I have too much respect for everyone here to do that. That was really cute. Anyway, what I really loved about the episode is that we got to see how much everyone has grown. Like, it really was about showing that this group of people is not who they started off as, that they are no longer dealing with those same insecurities or fears or whatever you want to call it that kept them in stasis for so long. Without Niles, even, they have managed to overcome like decades of trauma that they were not getting rid of with Niles there, which I think says something, right? Especially when at the end Niles reveals that he's responsible for those accidents or for the things that happened in their life, which I thought was like, I feel like we kind of knew this, like we were waiting for this to be the reveal, because it's just so weird that he just collected all these people. But it plays into a larger picture, I think, for me, like maybe Mr. Nobody like isn't as bad as we think, like we hit isn't as bad as we think it is, because so far all it's been is just hang out with Niles for a while and they can make the Doom Patrol know the truth about him. So I don't know. I think it's like a really interesting reversal of expectations. It definitely leaves the finale wide open, right? Like, are they gonna forgive the chief and then work together to stop Mr. Nobody, or are they gonna realize that they're better off without the chief and maybe this is leading them in a different direction? I don't know. Also really liked how the rest of them got out of their little memories or torture chambers or whatever you want to call it really easily because of all the growth they've made. And then it was Niles, like in the end, in the second round, Niles was the one that like took a really long time with like several rounds before he realized what was going on. So yeah. But yeah, overall, I thought it was really good. Like this has definitely been the best superhero show this season, even though, as Mr. Nobody likes to point out, it isn't really a superhero show. But that's for the best because it really has been putting character first. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I was happy with almost all the arcs and I'm definitely looking forward to the finale.
Yeah, I do think it was like the best penultimate episode of all the penultimate episodes. And in general, the show is just very, very strong. But this particular episode had a lot of like fantastic payoff. After so many episodes, we finally got a hint of Mr. Nobody's life from the 40s and how he was like the overlooked employee over at the Brotherhood of Evil. And I guess there are like evil levels, various levels of evil. I don't know. in some ways, like if you can compare Mr. Nobody to Gary a little bit, like he is a doormat and he was undermined. And that's like what in part drove him to his actions and to do the things that he did. And I enjoyed seeing Danny Street again as well. And I love that the Doom Patrol had to go to the like the white space between the content in the comic book, essentially, to get to Mr. Nobody. Like in the context of comic books, the white space is usually ignored. Like we don't look at it. You know, we're just so focused on the pictures and the words. So it's empty and like devoid of story. And then when Rita starts narrating, she proves that like the white space is only as powerful as the story being told and who is telling it, which I thought was really good. Filling it with new content changes the trajectory of the narrative, and that says a lot about the team itself and how far they've come. Like in the first episode, they would have given anything to go back to their old lives, having spent so many decades being in denial over what kind of people they actually were, and now they're redefining who they are by acknowledging past mistakes instead of brushing them off. And that really becomes clear when they're in Mr. Nobody's world. And then the episode went in a lot of directions I wasn't expecting, and the reveal that Niles was behind all the Doom Patrol's accidents was a little bit surprising to me because like we did, I guess we did see it coming, but I guess the way that they handled it was just because we haven't really seen that much of Niles is what I'm saying. So this still had like the emotional impact, even if we did see it coming in like thinking back on it in retrospect. I hope all that made sense.
Yeah, I think it did. Like, it's like, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. We've had this, the whole kind of overarching impression that the audience has had of Niles is that he's this like caring figure that collected all these people and they can, that's why they are committed to getting him back. But then you also have these like little digs at Niles throughout the series and you're just kind of like, really? But then he reveals that he's actually responsible, like, really? Yeah, so
like we wanted to believe he was a good guy.
Right. He's like the opposite of Silas. Well, yeah. actually, I'll get to that later. But yeah,
and I like the cycle of like seeing of Niles watching the Doom Patrol die over and over again. Like no matter what he tried to do, it didn't work because it was his guilt and torture over his actions unknowingly manifesting inside the white space. Like that's how I perceived it. And then I said last week I was afraid Flex would accompany the team on their quest while Vic was left behind, but I'm glad that didn't play out the way that I thought it would. So Vic got some meaty moments with his dad, and I like that he apologized for beating him up, and that they had like a brief moment before Silas opened a whole new can of worms. And I did like that Vic left to be with his team in the white space. Like Mr. Nobody's commentary continues to make me laugh because like the very meta line about being powerful enough to control the streaming service was really funny.
I love that. Like Doom Patrol is easily like, one of my most like my favorite and like most enjoyable superhero show this season. And it's like out of 14 episodes that we've had now, there've only been like two, and you know the two that I'm talking about if you've been listening because I repeat them often. But there's only been like two, and I'm like you know what? You could have kept that. You know, I didn't need that one. So 2 out of 14 is a pretty good record. And even like it's on an ensemble show where all or most of the characters get an even amount of screen time and development is really refreshing. And I say most because I think Vic got, I mean, it's obvious that Vic got the shortest end of the stick overall over the course of the season. However, like after watching the penultimate patrol, even that makes sense to me now. It's been stated like over and over throughout the series that Vic is already an established hero as Cyborg. So he's already there. And then you have Cliff, Rita, Larry, and Jane who are not there so far from being any kind of established hero maturity. They have not reached that yet. So the whole season is them kind of playing catch up to their in their origin stories while being most times unwillingly guided by their superhero senpai of sorts. So it makes sense more now seeing where that emotional payoff has come in, why they decided to tell it the way that they told it, and spent so much time on the stories he spent so much time on. We've been able to watch these backstories of each of them develop all season from beginning as pretty terrible and damaged people, not great people, to going through those sins, seeing their truths, having to own that and atone for those sins, letting go of their own bullshit, and actually, like, growing into better people. And that all pays off in penultimate episode. So, like, the whole season was preparing you to get to this point. So when they are tempted from a deal by Mr. Nobody to return to, like, the status quo, the thing that they had been wanting to do for years prior to the start, because they've been with Niles for, you know, like, 50-something years, and they have not progressed at all. So when you consider that, and that being what they wanted for so long, when Mr. Nobody offers it to them, there is this kind of, like, are they gonna, you know, is that selfishness gonna come back, and Rita decides to be the movie star that she always wanted to be, and not have to deal with this, like, horrible disfiguration of her body and all that kind of stuff. So, and it was really, like, I love Rita so much, and so, like, the fact that she not only decided that she was not going to go back to the way that she was, but she also took control over her narrative, like, literally by choosing to narrate. So, like, I'm tired of your narration, I'm going to do this. I thought it was great. It's so good. Yeah, love her. I love that Dane in the Street was back and that they aren't a one-off character, because that definitely could have been, like, a one episode and one and done kind of episode. And so I'm glad Dane was back. The audience and Larry already know Danny, so it was entertaining for us and probably for Larry, too, to see how Rita, Cliff, and Jane would react to the existence of a sentient genderqueer street. The explanation of Mr. Nobody's lair being in the white space, and I like how you explain that, May, in the context of, like, comics, and I thought it was a really smart and ingenious way to do it. That was a really cool way to include that. And also a little bit about the fourth wall breaking, and that it's very aware that it's a comic show and includes those little comic elements into it, even in Mr. Nobody's narration, how he breaks the fourth wall all the time. So I liked all of those points. And then flexing the wrong muscle and giving the whole street an orgasm. Rita, like, momentarily losing control of her form. Danny's orgasm manifesting through, like, inflatable, like, air dolls and busted fire hydrants. And Cliff, like, faking it because he didn't want to feel left out. Like, all of that. Like, it's in the middle of a serious climactic plot. The characters literally climax. Like, that's great. Ground stopping. Genius. Hilarious.
At first I was like, what's happening? I was like, oh my God. Oh.
Oh. And like flex throughout it all. I was like, oh God. You like gave the whole. Also, if you consider the fact that. It's kind of funny when you consider the fact that over this season, like, sex and relationships haven't really been, like, a big part of anything, and anybody, like, no one has been getting anything all season, and now everybody's, like, collectively having an orgasm right before they go to war. Awesome. And it was long, too. They had a good long orgasm. Nice. Speaking of origins, I also like that we got a little bit more of the insight to Mr. Nobody's villain origin story, and I like that it was so bland. Like, it's like the reversal of what you expect. Like, there's a brotherhood of evil, and kind of feels like a corporation. Like, Mr. Nobody's trying to, like, move up the corporate ladder, but he doesn't have initiative, and that's why his girlfriend breaks up with him. Not because he's evil, but because he's not evil enough. I thought that was like hilarious, and it kind of makes sense now. How that drove him to Hitler Germany to tear his body apart in the first place, and his name being Mr. Nobody. It's so absurd and so understandable at the same time. I don't know how the writers do that, but they do it, and they do it time and time again. Yeah, like how lame do you have to be fired as a villain? Like, it's pretty lame. Like, he has no evil ambitions. That's why his girlfriend broke up with him. Like, that, like, it's so absurd. It's such an absurd conversation being played with such complete normalcy that it just is really fun to watch.
And then the team was making fun of him. It's like, this is why you're doing what you're doing, like, over a breakup?
Like, well, you're worse than us. Like, we thought we were losers. You're, like, a super loser. But what did not spark joy for you guys?
I think the only thing that I didn't like was the reveal of what happened to Vic's mom. And kind of was, I don't know, like he was still responsible for it, but his dad lied about when his mom died. And his dad lied about the fact that he chose Vic over his mom. It was kind of like, okay, thank you for sharing that information. So, like, I get why it upset Vic, obviously, and why it would push him back to Doom Patrol, which is great, because it's like, that's kind of what I wanted, you know, without killing his dad. But I think it would have been much more interesting to have, like, a reason that his memories were changed, like, for real, you know? And even if it hadn't been Silas who had done that, like, maybe Silas just left it alone because he didn't know. He didn't want to tell him what really happened. And he was like, well, that's already what you think happened. Okay, moving on. But if Silas hadn't been willing to do that, and that was going to be, like, the storyline for next season, like, why are his memories like this? Blah, blah, blah. And then Vic could leave because he's like, I need time to figure out who I am or whatever. And also rescued the Doom Patrol instead of like, I'm mad at you again, Dad. Sorry, I almost killed you, but I'm still mad. So I was like, all right, okay. Eh. So yes, that's it.
And what makes it even worse is like, if he had killed his dad, he would have felt the same guilt over that. But that, I mean, right. That was his dad's fault, but it was terrible. but yeah, I agree about the reveal of Vic's mom, or like what happened to her and all of that. Like, it made Silas look pretty shitty when he admitted that Vic did actually have a reason to distrust him. And I can't understand why he thought it was a good idea to keep Vic in the dark regarding his mom. Like, when he said he didn't think something like blaming himself for his mom's death would take a toll on Vic, I thought he was lying, because like, how could you not assume that's what would happen? And while I do get why the writers kept this reveal until this episode, I still think that they could have worked it in so that Vic learned about this earlier, especially since it was introduced all the way back in like the second episode.
Right. And I wrote my thoughts down first on this, so mine are probably more lengthy about why this was a major dislike for me. The only thing I really didn't like about the penultimate episode, while I understood why Vic's story seems less developed than the others, as I mentioned before, because it really isn't about him because he's already established as a hero, I do wish that it had a bit more, like, I understand why you didn't go into it, but I still wish it had a bit more depth or mystery than it turned out to have. So like, the reveal was not that revealing to me. I feel like the writers didn't want to pull the trigger completely on Silas being cold and uncaring or evil. So they kept the truth that Vic caused the accident that killed his mom, but they still wanted Vic to be upset with Silas. So they came up with, she survived the explosion, but I lied about it. Like, Silas, I feel like Silas is a smart man. He owns a lab. He fixed his son with technology. I just want someone to walk me through the logic of saying, like, I don't want my son to hate me because I chose him over my wife, so I'll just let him think that he killed his mom instead. Like, I don't understand how he thought that was better. Like, feels like all of this emotional trauma just over the thought that he killed his mom. So Vic's feeling all this emotional trauma, but at least he'll still love me. Like, that's kind of what it seemed like Silas was saying. It's like, that's just, like, ridiculous. Make that make sense. How manipulating your child to believe he killed his mother was the better option than just saying, you know what, your mom would have wanted me to save you anyway, and that's what I did, you know? And like, even at the end of the day, if he has to tell Vic that, you know, I had to make a choice and I chose you because your mom would have wanted me to choose you, at the end of the day, that doesn't really erase the pain or emotional trauma that Vic feels, because Vic still caused the accident. So it's not like, I think that's the thing. Like, it's not even like we have this mystery of his memory of his mother's death and the fact that it was a little shady. Like, there's something that happened that was not being told the whole truth. So you're expected to believe that Vic didn't really cause his mom's death. Like, the footage is altered. He didn't do it. What is the truth? But the truth is that he did it. And I thought that was like kind of like an underwhelming kind of way to end it. Like, she may not have died right away, but she was still dying. And Silas, like Silas said, she would have wanted Silas to save her son. So like, this whole kind of the reveal of, yes, you still ultimately killed your mother, but she just died a little later, felt a little bit shallow to me. And a different shade of the same truth that we've heard all season. I feel like I would have really rather have had the Father Box storyline that I talked about last week from, like, Young Justice, that kind of storyline, like Silas saves Vic with alien technology that he doesn't completely understand, and that tech leads to the death of Vic's mom in a freak accident. And then Silas and Niles reboot the tech to wipe Vic's mind, but as it continues to, like, reboot and grow over the course of the season, his, like, memories slowly start to come back in weird ways, starting with the shock that he killed his mom and unraveling from there. Like, that would have been really compelling. And it also wouldn't have taken up, they could have done that in the same amount of screen time that they allotted Vic. In reality, they could have done that same storyline and have it feel much more interesting or compelling or mysterious, and have the reveal be that much more, have that much more weight. Because it's still Vic caused her death. And then you wouldn't even have, like, the clear burden would be on Silas for installing the tech in the first place. Even though he was still doing it for the right reasons, there had been, like, a clear burden of blame on Silas over it being that, you know, Vic actually did kill his mom kind of thing.
Agreed.
So, I guess predictions. Cyborg is back in the picture with the group, so right. Do you predict that painting will come true, or?
Ooh.
I almost forgot about the painting.
Yeah. I think that they'll probably come to the point where it's, like, about to happen and then change it.
Okay.
I accept this. I have nothing else. Okay. I have nothing. Not nothing else.
I still want to hold on to my grid season because Cyborg has to matter sometime. So I don't know that we'll get it this season, but there's still the issue of grid being shady. Like, I feel like they try to say that they solved it and that grid is actually not bad, but that seems fake to me. So maybe now that the characters are on some kind of, like, the same emotional maturity page, I can get that Father Box story or something like that that I deserve in season two, unless Vic moves over to Titans and then he'll just collect dust with Gar before. Yes, that's all for this week. So, Lady with Gumption nominations for side B.
Nora for the Nora. Flash.
Mm-hmm. I think Nora and Charlie. Yes, Nora finally learned her Lady with Gumption of the Week on the Flash.
She actually has a choice.
She took responsibility, and chose to sacrifice herself rather than allow herself to become corrupted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Nora and Charlie, I think, from Legends, but more so Charlie.
Yeah.
And completing her character arc, you know, making a 180 from how she started. And yes, Rita definitely for, Rita for taking the reins.
My creating forever
her own narration.
On Doom Patrol. I feel like I nominate Rita, like, almost every time. It's like, oh, man, she doesn't
You have, yeah.
She's always great. She's always great.
So, Rita, Charlie, Nora, and then Kara Linda from Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
Who is not making it into the final round?
Kara.
I feel like, oh, dang it. So, can I say, like, I feel like Rita can probably go, but I just love her so much. Especially, like, her taking over the narrative from Mr. Nobody was really powerful. But also, Flex was, like, having a moment with Danny. She's like, you know what? You matter.
You're valid. But the beard hunter is more.
Let me acknowledge your feelings and that you matter. But, which I don't think she would have done before.
Yeah, that's true. But I feel like Nora, you know, she doesn't get another chance. This is it.
She sacrificed herself.
What about Linda? Because Linda died too.
Okay, Linda was working under brainwashing and order from Lex. Okay.
But did she have dumb rope? Yes or no? She did.
Nora broke.
You could argue Nora was being brainwashed by Thawne.
And she was. She was.
Brainwashing.
She was.
She broke free from that brainwashing.
She broke free.
Yeah.
And she chose because she didn't want to live a negative Speed Force.
Yeah, she didn't want to live the life.
Okay. I feel like that one line is what's going to save Nora. Yes! And give her this one time.
The guard. Lita still has next week. The guard never get to see. There you go.
Fine. Fine.
Rita still has one more week left, Jess. Don't lose hope.
Rita has another week left, and she's won before. It's not like she hasn't won before.
No, I wasn't, like, saying that. Yeah. I would have gone with, if I had to go to a final two, I would have chosen Linda over Rita in my finale. But Nora, you can have this one. Nora, West Allen from The Flash, is our Lady with Corruption of the Week. For dying for all of us.
She died for our sins.
Okay. So we'll see you all next week when the rest of these shows decide that they want in. And we'll come with the finales of Supergirl Legends and Doom Patrol. Likes, dislikes, all that good stuff. Talk to us on the various platforms, Twitter and Tumblr, email. And we'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.